This is FMT Magazine, issue 61 for spring 2023. Freemasonry Today magazine is the official journal of the United Grand Lodge of England. The editor is Donna Hardy, and the editorial panel is Michelle Warville, Sean Butler, Marta Zandri, Guy Roberts, Martin Cherry, and Julian Perry, the culture editor. It's published by Sunday at 207 Union Street, London, SE1 0LN, on the web at www.wearesunday.com, for the United Grand Lodge of England at Freemasons Hall, Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ. The editorial manager is Marta Zandri. For Masonic inquiries, you can email editor at freemasonrytoday.com or call 020-7831-9811. The United Grand Lodge of England is on the web at ugle.org.uk. The magazine is copyright the United Grand Lodge of England 2023. The opinions herein are those of the authors or persons interviewed only and do not reflect the views of the United Grand Lodge of England or Sunday. In a moment, we'll have the welcome from the Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E, Adrian Marsh, welcoming you to the spring issue. And then in the Out and About section, we've got provincial and district news, UGLE's new strategy, quarterly communication, the 1723 constitutions, and Grandmaster's visit to Berkshire, and a commemorative Fabergé egg. In the stories section, there's HMS Audacious, Submariners Take on the Atlantic, Talking Freemasonry, Craftcast, the new Freemasons podcast. And then in the Daily Advancement section, we have an article, Role of Honour, the Museum of Freemasonry takes a look back at past pro-grandmasters. In the Grand Lodge section, Growing the Ranks, the Members' Pathway Working Party. And in the Royal Arch section, two articles, the Supreme Grand Chapter, the pro-first grand principle on aspiring to the fourth element, and Back to School, Essex Royal Arch brings joy to local primary schools. And then the culture section, we have the book reviews.
On page 3, from the Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E. Well, companions and brethren, it has been another whirlwind few months since I last wrote my column. Pro-Grandmaster Jonathan Spence has set out to us our new strategy and what each and every one of us can do to deliver it. We had a very exciting December quarterly communication where I had the privilege to host a lively panel discussion. This was a first in Grand Lodge and was the idea of Tom Milner, our youngest and quite possibly the youngest ever member of the Board of General Purposes. In the spirit of being innovative, we proceeded with his idea and I was joined by four brethren from across our organisation: a Master Mason from a London Lodge, Henry Cunnington, a Provincial Communications Officer from Worcestershire and the voice of Solomon Live, Brodie Swain, a young and passionate Provincial Grand Secretary from South Wales, Ben Gate, and an extremely enthusiastic and imaginative Provincial Grand Master from Durham, John Thompson. If you haven't already done so, then please do watch the video of the discussion, which is available on YouTube. I trust you will be as excited as I am with regard to delivering on the challenge, which should now be very clear. We also didn't let the national train strike on the day do anything to dilute the impact of the meeting, with many provinces sending coachloads of brethren to fill Grand Temple and engage with the discussions over lunch. It takes more than complete travel disruption to break the tenacity of our members. The most repeated aspect of the address to Grand Lodge was "yes if, not no because," and my sense on the day was how supportive everyone was to this approach. There was also much excitement about the news that we will be holding another experiment and breaking with tradition, with September's quarterly communication moving, for the first time since before the war, from London to a province, with the International Convention Centre Wales at Celtic Manor having been selected. If the experiment proves a success, then this may well be a regular event, with the September QC moving around different provinces. Of particular relevance to my role as Grand Secretary is to ensure the strong foundations that underpin the strategy are in place and being continuously improved. This currently falls into three main areas of focus: our organisation at UGLE, our IT platform, and our unique Freemasons Hall. The organisation at UGLE is being reorganised clearly to support the strategy and to be an agent of, not barrier to, change. Our IT is key to providing mission-critical data to our provinces to support their specific membership challenge, and also to improve the processes for all our Lodge Secretaries and Scribes Ezra and our overall membership experience. In recognising the importance of IT, we have appointed Hugh Douglas-Smith to be our Chief Information Officer. Hugh has spent his life in IT and was also the Deputy Provincial Grand Master of Buckinghamshire prior to accepting the role, and is a first-class addition to our team at UGLE. Hugh has spent a lot of his time recently working with the Hermes pilot provinces to make sure that when we roll it out to the rest of our provinces, it is an absolute success and really does make life easier. In terms of Freemasons Hall, we have a unique asset which needs to be kept in all its splendour to be enjoyed by our members for many years to come. This does, unfortunately, come at a cost, which we need to keep as low as possible, both through tight management of expenses and also by generating third-party income to defray. By the time you hear this, we will have also celebrated the 300th anniversary of our constitutions with a truly amazing especial meeting of Grand Lodge on the 31st of January. Rick Berman has again proved what an asset he is to us with a remarkable presentation and exhibition at the museum, which is still on show for anyone who wishes to view it in person. Grand Lodge was then converted into a cinema, and we were entertained by an outstanding film produced by Matthew Mitchell that proved both enlightening and entertaining. We are also extremely fortunate to have, as this year's Prestonian lecturer, Akram Elias, who has been shuttling over from Washington, D.C. to give his incredibly interesting lecture with his own blend of charm and panache. Everyone left Grand Lodge inspired and invigorated about the next 300 years. I would like to conclude with a plea for help. One of the best-kept Masonic secrets is the depth of talent we have among our members. While good ritualists are always visible, less visible are those with other skills to offer. This could, for example, be in IT, communications, commercial operations, legal, or finance, and we are constantly looking to tap into these skills to prosecute our strategy. Please, if you feel you have some expertise you could contribute, regardless of Masonic rank, whether you are in work or retired, then please let me know at grandsecretary@ugle.org.uk. Your Grand Secretary needs you. Adrian Marsh, Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E.
Page 6 begins the Out and About section with this article, Forging a Thriving Future, the Strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and Beyond. Last year, we gave you an overview of how UGLE plans to grow our membership in the years ahead. We'd like to enlighten you on how we all have a part to play in strengthening the membership. The current strategy was formed in 2022 under the Pro Grand Master's leadership to develop our approach for the next 7-year period. So why do we need one? While most major organisations have a public strategy, we can assure you this is not a tick-the-box exercise or to follow some trend or fad. Our aim is simple: to cement our reputation as a force for good in our communities and society at large, and as a thriving organisation with people aspiring to join us. Freemasonry has been an important part of the development of our society for more than 300 years. The impact of our charitable efforts and member contributions cannot be overestimated. However, a slow but steady decline in our membership numbers threatens our relevance to a wider society and our ability to have a positive impact on local communities. On average, there's been a 2.5% annual decline in our membership each year across England, Wales, the Channel Islands and the Isle of Man since 2008, taking us from around 200,000 members 10 years ago to a little more than 150,000 today. While we've made great progress over the past year with initiations, this is really only reversing the impact of the pandemic. Even with this substantial increase, we still had a slight decline in members overall. Importantly, these losses are not coming from where you would think. Although we are, on average, an older organisation, death in this situation is not the enemy. We lose far too many members to resignation, cessation and exclusions, including those who quietly drift away. It almost completely negates all the excellent work we've done in bringing new initiates into the craft, and our membership challenge is to close this gap. At present, we either need to increase initiations by 46% or reduce resignations accordingly. The ideal practical reality would be a mix of the two. One particular statistic is that 17% of new initiates are lost within 3 years of joining. This is an average for UGLE. In some provinces, the figure is 30%. Others leave later for a number of reasons, including lodge closures, usually because they've moved to a different part of the country and don't rejoin a lodge, or simply because they've stopped enjoying their Freemasonry. All of this is avoidable. The temple is set upon strong foundations. These are the practical and logistical elements that UGLE and the provinces need to deliver for you as a best-in-class organisation. There are three pillars. The first is thriving membership, which is critical to tackling the membership challenge and is about attracting new members and ensuring their experience keeps them in Freemasonry for life. It also sets out how we can engage with existing members, ensuring that Freemasonry remains relevant and enjoyable for them, particularly those who attend their lodge infrequently. The second pillar, coherent organisation, sets out how we, across all levels of our organisation, must act as one in delivering the strategy. Everyone, from the Grand Master to the newest entered apprentice, has a duty and a responsibility to support the success of our organisation. Without our membership pulling in the same direction, the strategy will fail. The third pillar, community engagement, is what we already do so well. We must build upon our charitable works and member contributions to their communities and wider society as a whole, to ensure we continue to promote a positive and attractive profile and image for Freemasonry. To be clear, our ultimate goals are immensely achievable. We aren't talking about setting unrealistic targets such as 20% growth in membership. Rather, our approach is for slow and steady increases in our numbers. The aim is to grow the membership by 1% per annum by year 3 and 2% per annum by year 7, which marks the end of the strategy period. This should set us on a sustainable growth trajectory as a nationally relevant and thriving membership organisation for the next 300 years. Every Mason has a part to play, no matter where they sit in our organisation. Now, as mentioned by the Grand Secretary in his welcome, there was a Q&A, which you can see on YouTube, Views on the Strategy. And page 9 is an article which reviews that Q&A. The host was Adrian Marsh, and the four panellists were John Thompson, Ben Gate, Henry Cunnington and Brodie Swain. John Thompson, the Provincial Grand Master Durham and Grand Superintendent over and above Durham, initiated into Hart Lodge number 4217 in 1995, exalted into Hart Chapter number 4217 in 2004. John's first question from Adrian was, John, as a provincial Grand Master, what element of the strategy resounds the most for you, and how are you planning on reflecting local characteristics to maximise the impact?
The thing that strikes me the most about the strategy is the positive approach it takes. It's really making us all think as Freemasons in our lodges and districts about change, to adapt and to change where necessary. We have a rich tapestry that we have to tap into. But at the core of everything is the Freemason, and it is important that we look after them from day one, to make sure the enjoyment is there. If we send them home happy, then a happy Freemason is an ambassador for our organisation. I think that with any strategy, you have to give the local feel. No one understands the province, district, or metropolitan like those that live and breathe it every day. We have to be mindful of the circumstances that our members are living with. We get those units that will go driving forward with their strategy and taking it on board, while others will be slower. But we need to make sure everyone is going in the same direction. If we achieve that, then I think we will achieve success.
Ben Gate is the Provincial Grand Secretary and Provincial Grand Scribe Ezra for South Wales. Initiated into Universities Lodge Cardiff number 5461 in 2006, exalted into St David's Chapter number 679 in 2009. Ben, as a Provincial Grand Secretary, you have the task of dealing with the practical elements of the strategy rollout. For you, what will be the most important areas to get right?
For me, one of the key elements is the accuracy and timely availability of data. Our members would expect us to invest in IT and those management information systems that make that a possibility. I know UGLE has recently developed a new system and solution for that, and South Wales, my own province, was fortunate enough to be one of the earliest in the rollout of the delivery plan. Being able to use that has made me believe passionately that it's exactly the sort of system we should roll out across our organisation. UGLE has also appointed a Chief Information Officer who not only is an IT professional, but a past Deputy Provincial Grand Master, so knows the IT aspect as well as the craft and the Royal Arch.
Next, Brodie Swain. Brodie Swain is Provincial Grand Communications Officer for Worcestershire, initiated into Royal Standard Lodge number 498 in 2014, exalted into Royal Standard Chapter number 498 in 2015. Brodie, tackling the membership challenge is a key aim of the strategy. Given this focus, what have you found to be the most effective ways of attracting members to the craft and then retaining them?
We had the pandemic and it was a difficult time, but it can't be denied that it was an opportunity for Freemasons to show the world what we do, not just during the pandemic, but as a whole. We grabbed hold of that and used it as an opportunity, and it did us a lot of good. The other thing which I am passionate about is our shop window. I didn't know anyone prior to joining, so I came via the internet. It is important that our shop window, website and Facebook pages are sending out the right messages. Also, we should be celebrating the work that goes on in the province. If we have lodges that are doing great things, and they have an army of initiates waiting to join, what we should do is celebrate that.
Henry Cunnington, newly made Freemason, initiated into Lodge of Faithful Service number 6682 in 2018, exalted into the Savage Club Chapter number 2190 in 2021. Henry responds to the same question.
Freemasonry came at the right time in my life. I had moved to London and was looking to find something new and add to my social group as well as add a different dynamic. I heard about Freemasonry through family members, and on top of that, I was interested in what the ritual had to offer. I thought it was worth exploring, and I was right. I found a really good collection of friends, many of whom I see very regularly. On top of that, I find the ritual and what goes on inside the lodge fascinating, and I learn something new every time. It's always interesting and rewarding when you're on that path in terms of progressing through ranks of being an officer in the lodge. There is a lot to learn and always something interesting happening.
A really important point is that we aren't just bringing in initiates, but that we ensure that they stay. Brodie, what have you done in lodges you're involved with to keep new members engaged?
Asking the question, how are you? If we were to ask a Freemason how they are doing, they could say whether they're enjoying us or not at the moment, or whether they're not really understanding a particular aspect of Freemasonry. We can work on that. If we notice one of our members not turning up to the lodge, instead of just accepting that and thinking they are taking a break for a while, we should pick up the phone or go round and see them and ask if everything is okay. Those are the things we should be doing, and I think it's essential that we do that. Being the chairman of my New and Young Masons Club, I would recommend any lodge to tell their new members there is an organisation for them to associate themselves with like-minded individuals. Ultimately, all of us have got a story, perhaps, of a Freemason that put their arm around our shoulders and guided us a little bit. Why not be that person for a new member?
Ben, how is your province going to support lodges, both in terms of bringing in new members, but also keeping them actively engaged as they progress?
Freemasonry is a journey, so our members will need different things from the organisation at different stages. We have a membership team that is in place initially to take any potential candidates to match them up with a lodge that best fits their circumstances and interests. Once brethren are members, there's a whole range of activities and communities that they can become a part of to enjoy their Freemasonry. In South Wales, we have a learning and development team that runs regular workshops and events. We have a New and Young Masons Club that does what it says on the tin. We've got two universities scheme lodges, and we also have the installed masters lodges. So when people come out of the chair, there's still a new community for them to become a part of.
John, you're a Grand Superintendent as well as PGM. How do you see the Royal Arch playing into the success of the strategy?
I think it's really important that the Royal Arch and the craft and the strategy work together. One needs the other to be successful. The Act of Union of 1813 gives us this indivisible link between the craft and the Royal Arch, and it really is important that we encourage our members to join when the time is right for them. We in Durham have a combined executive for chapter and craft, whether it's executive, secretariat or its communications, right across the board we speak with one voice, which I think then helps us to push the unified strategy in our province.
Ben, as you deal with lodges and chapters in your province, what practical messages are you going to give them about how they can change and adapt to tackle the membership challenge and support the strategy?
Freemasonry has a very diverse membership, and I think we need a diverse collection of lodges so that members can always find a lodge that suits their individual needs. The province is there to support and enable lodges and chapters that want to thrive and to develop their own characters. As long as we're working within the confines of the regulations, there really should be an approach of, what can we do? Rather than, we've always done it this way, or we can't do that because... There's an openness to have discussions with lodges and chapters, for example, about meeting on weekends versus in the middle of the day, or meeting at times to allow for work and then to get to meetings in the evenings. The most important thing is the conversation, and as long as lodges and chapters want to have the conversation with provinces, then we can find the solution that works for them and enable their members to really enjoy their Freemasonry. It's that enjoyment that I think will make the members come back for more.
Page 12 has the next article entitled Fortifying Freemasonry. In his address to Grand Lodge in December, Pro-Grandmaster Jonathan Spence explained how UGLE's new strategy can help Freemasonry to thrive. Brethren, as you will have gathered from the presentation and panel discussion led by the Grand Secretary, it's been something of a journey for the Strategy Working Group in formulating and designing the strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and beyond. Its purpose is clear: to ensure that Freemasonry under the United Grand Lodge of England continues to thrive and to strengthen it for the future. This journey has not been one undertaken by the Strategy Working Group in isolation. There have been presentations to all metropolitan, district and provincial Grand Masters and Grand Superintendents, and we have benefited from their advice, much of which has been incorporated into the strategy being launched today. The Grand Master has already expressed his thanks from the commitment and enthusiasm shown by metropolitan, provincial and district rulers thus far, to which I would like to add my personal thanks. Without their support, we would not have made as much progress as we have. But this is just the start. There's a lot more progress still to come. A strategy needs to articulate plainly the challenges an organisation is trying to address. It should set out clearly how it intends to tackle those challenges, and it also needs to demonstrate how it will know if it has been successful in doing so. I believe, brethren, the strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and beyond does just this, clearly, succinctly, and unambiguously. There are several matters I should like to emphasise with respect to the strategy for the benefit of all our members, in addition to what's already been said. The first is the integrated nature of the strategy. It covers both the craft and the Royal Arch. It applies every bit as much to Royal Arch chapters as it does to craft lodges. This is to ensure that all members of the United Grand Lodge of England understand the unique place of this Grand Lodge in the world. In particular, that pure ancient Freemasonry comprises 3 degrees and no more, namely those of the Entered Apprentice, Fellow Craft and Master Masons, including the Supreme Order of the Holy Royal Arch. I will say no more now, as I covered this in more detail in my address to Supreme Grand Chapter in November, but this is something on which we will build. The enjoyment and engagement of all our members is a key feature of the strategy. This applies equally to those members of longer standing as it does to those who have recently become Freemasons. We've all had a responsibility to ensure that our lodge and chapter meetings are always occasions where everyone enjoys the whole evening with good ceremonies, the essential camaraderie on which we thrive, and that we leave looking forward to the next meeting. It is also the responsibility of all members of a lodge or chapter, not just that of the membership officer, mentor or almoner, to support their members. It's a team effort and we're all responsible, not least the proposer and seconder of the brother or companion concerned. When someone is not seen for a time, please contact them to ascertain they're not in difficulty and to understand why they've not been able to attend and what can be done to help keep them involved. This may be as simple as just offering them a lift to the next meeting. This support and just offering them the hand of friendship might just help to address the issue of resignations or, what's worse, cessations and exclusions where members just quietly drift away, often unnoticed. Attracting new members is important, but retaining the active engagement and enjoyment of our existing members will be just as much the key to our success. Across the Constitution, we must adopt a yes-if attitude at all levels and be an organisation that learns lessons from trying alternative ways of doing things. For too long, the standard answer in considering adapting things without losing the essence of Freemasonry or being a Freemason has been no, because. The usual corollary to this is that inevitable phrase, we've always done it that way. We all know this really means what can be remembered of the practice in any particular lodge over the past 20 or 30 years. It's not just in Freemasonry, brethren, it also happens in other member organisations, but it is a feature in too many lodges and chapters. A yes-if approach transforms the discussion into something positive. When something new is tried in a lodge or chapter, be it a later start time, a double or a triple ceremony, a strict rule of the meeting lasting no more than 90 minutes, or the dinner ending by a set time, we need to consider whether it achieved what was hoped. We need to reflect on what lessons can be learnt to make it better and if the members enjoyed it. We all know that if we go to a lodge which has a buzz, we all enjoy it and feel more engaged with Freemasonry. It only takes 2 or 3 members in a lodge to take the lead and encourage others to establish that essential atmosphere for a lodge to thrive. We will also be making certain that there are only a few initiatives which we introduce at any one time from Grand Lodge. We will ensure they are done consistently well and are effective before moving on to further initiatives. A good example of this is the revised members' pathway. This is essential for the delivery of the strategy and securing our future. It needs to be adopted and implemented consistently across the metropolitan area and all provinces. The rulers, both Craft and Royal Arch, will be working closely with provincial rulers on this. For any strategy to be successful, it requires all parts of an organisation to support it actively and implement it consistently and effectively. It also needs to be adapted to local needs and priorities. Provincial and district rulers have been asked to confirm how they will adjust their provincial and district strategies to align their local approach with the overarching strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and beyond. This is integral to being a coherent organisation. As with all plans, the strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and beyond will continue to evolve and improve as we engage with our membership and learn what has gone well and what needs to improve. We will also check regularly that we are progressing. Brethren, our challenge is clear. We cannot and must not assume that we can just carry on as before. But there is no silver bullet. We will make progress through incremental changes in many areas by being willing to innovate and try new approaches, to learn what works and to share this knowledge. We all have a part to play. It's a team game at all levels of Freemasonry under this Grand Lodge to ensure all our meetings are enjoyable and all members are engaged. I know the Metropolitan, District and Provincial rulers and their teams are ready to play their part fully in implementing the strategy. I know, brethren, if we are all willing to adopt Yes If and are willing to innovate and learn, then I am confident that with your support and full engagement, we can and will succeed. Thank you, brethren. And that's the article from Jonathan Spence.
On page 15, the foundations of Freemasonry. In a seminal event in the Freemasons' calendar, members met at Grand Lodge for a very special celebration to mark the tercentenary of the 1723 constitutions. More than 1,600 people attended the especial meeting of Grand Lodge on the 31st of January, including Grand Masters and representatives from American and European Grand Lodges, as well as the Grand Masters of the Order of Women Freemasons and HFAF Freemasonry for Women. The programme, which was titled The 1723 Constitutions, Inventing the Future, included interesting talks from Dr. Rick Berman and Akram Elias, Prestonian Lecturer for 2023 and former Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Washington, D.C. The event also featured outstanding filmed entertainment produced by Matthew Mitchell and narrated by David Jacoby. It was, in the words of Pro Grand Master Jonathan Spence, a truly extraordinary and wonderful event. The Constitutions gave the world an astonishingly bold, almost revolutionary proclamation of values. Starting with their promulgation, Freemasons became an important vector for the principles of the Enlightenment, confidently propagating notions of religious tolerance, meritocracy, self-improvement by education, and even democratic elections. Over time, these ideas spread to and were embraced across Europe and in the United States, shaping models of governance.
Page 16 has the next article entitled Celebrating 300 Years. As we reach a significant year in the history of the 1723 constitutions, we look at some of the events taking place to honour the tercentenary. Freemasons are celebrating the tercentenary of the 1723 constitutions in 2023. To mark this significant occasion, a year-long free exhibition opened on the 9th of January at the Museum of Freemasonry. This will be accompanied by national events throughout the provinces in England and Wales, as well as internationally. Under the banner of Inventing the Future, the exhibition features digital displays and items from the collections that have never previously been on public display. Among them is a personal copy of the Constitutions belonging to the Duke of Montagu, the first noble Grand Master, the box that contained the Duke of Richmond's miniature working tools, a maul purportedly belonging to Sir Christopher Wren, and rare early and mid-18th century items relating to Freemasonry and the Enlightenment. Masonic historian and academic Richard Berman, PhD, FRHISTS, says the 1723 Constitutions was based on Enlightenment foundations, values that lie at the core of modern Freemasonry in England and internationally. The Constitutions set up a pattern for Freemasonry throughout the world. Understanding the context helps explain the origins of modern Freemasonry and sheds light on the relationship between Freemasonry and society today. as well as the exhibition, a dedicated website, www.1723constitutions.com, and the 1723 is 1723, the digits, 1723constitutions.com, provides a comprehensive picture of the context, content and consequences of this remarkable book. The website sets out Freemasonry's principles and considers the people involved, not least French Protestant refugees, the Huguenots, and explores the context and framework within which their ideas were formed. It also discusses the impact of the 1723 constitutions in England, Ireland and Scotland, as well as in Europe, North and South America and elsewhere across the globe. To commemorate this special occasion, the United Grand Lodge of England is launching a series of podcasts on the 1723 constitutions, which include episodes on subjects such as the Dukes of Montague and Richmond, Black Freemasonry and Black Freemasons, Royal Freemasonry and Inventing the Future. And you can find out more about the Inventing the Future exhibition at www.museumoffreemasonry.org.uk.
On page 19, Consequences of the 1723 Constitutions, Part 1, Ireland. In the tercentenary of the 1723 Constitutions, Dr. Rick Berman explains its repercussions for Freemasonry in other countries, starting with Ireland. We are marking the tercentenary of the 1723 Constitutions by exploring the context in which it was written and explaining some of the more significant content. Another issue is the consequences of the publication of the 1723 Constitutions. A good place to begin would be Ireland, the home of the world's second oldest Grand Lodge, established in 1725. The introduction to Ireland of the English model of modern Freemasonry lagged developments in England by around 4 years. The starting point was probably the Duke of Montague's decision to accept the position of Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of England, a choice that attracted considerable interest. From that point, Freemasonry featured in many, if not most, of the Dublin press. John Worley's Dublin newsletter, for example, carried a description of Montague's installation in July 1721, and the following month, John Harding's opposition-leaning Dublin Impartial newsletter reported the initiation of several well-known aristocrats and political figures at the King's Arms Tavern in St. Paul's Churchyard, London. The Duke of Wharton's decision to join the craft also drew attention, with Ireland's newspapers alerting their readers to His Grace having been admitted into the Society of Freemasons. Despite having sold most of his Irish estates to invest in South Sea stock, a decision that proved to be a financial disaster, Wharton had many friends among the Anglo-Irish elites, including Richard Parsons, 1st Earl of Ross, who would later become the first Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Ireland. As in England, Irish Freemasonry was led publicly by the aristocracy. Parsons had succeeded to his father's viscountcy in the Irish peerage as a child, and at the age of 22 was raised to an earldom by George I to reward and encourage his political loyalty. Parsons was installed as Grand Master of Ireland in 1725, and probably remained the titular head of Irish Freemasonry until 1731. He then departed on a grand tour of Europe and Egypt, and was succeeded by James King, 4th Baron Kingston, who had been Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of England in 1728-29. Throughout the 1720s, 30s and 40s, there was a strong connection between the Grand Lodges of England and Ireland. Parsons had rank, celebrity and extensive connections in Ireland, where the family had had a presence and estates for some 200 years. He was young, affluent and a loyal Hanoverian, as were his grand officers. And like the Duke of Montague, Parsons served as a beacon to attract others into Freemasonry. Some historians have argued that in its formative years, the Grand Lodge of Ireland was subject to a factional struggle between Irish Jacobites and pro-Hanoverian Whigs, and that Irish Freemasonry was split accordingly. There is only slight evidence to support this view. Indeed, the opposite appears to have been the case, with Irish Freemasonry dominated by pro-Hanoverian elites. the principal motivation behind the creation of the Grand Lodge of Ireland and the participation of Dublin's aristocrats, gentry and professional classes was twofold: a desire to emulate the splendour and renown of the Grand Lodge of England, as well as a wish to identify with the Enlightenment ideas with which Freemasonry was associated. This was something seen elsewhere, including the formation of organisations such as the Dublin Society, which promoted science and national improvement in Ireland. The Dublin press published regular articles on Freemasonry throughout the 1720s, including popular exposés such as The Grand Mystery of the Freemasons Disclosed, and The Riposte, The Freemasons' Vindication, being an answer to a scandalous libel. At the same time, the 1723 Constitutions was advertised widely and available for sale in Dublin's booksellers. The first record of the Grand Lodge of Ireland appeared in June 1725 in the Dublin Weekly Journal, which published an account of Parson's appointment as Grand Master. The article describes the procession, installation and grand feast, recording that more than 100 gentlemen met at the Yellow Lion in Warborough Street and, quote, after some time putting on their aprons, white gloves and other parts of the distinguishing dress of that worshipful order, proceeded over Essex Bridge to the Strand, and from thence to the King's Inns. The parade comprised the masters and wardens of, quote, six lodges of gentlemen Freemasons, under the jurisdiction of the Grand Master, and after, quote, marching round the walls of the Great Hall, the Grand Lodge, composed of the Grand Master, Grand Wardens and the Masters and Wardens of the Lodges, retired to the room prepared for them where they proceeded to the election of a new Grand Master. The article continues, recording that they afterwards, quote, went to a play, with their aprons, etc., the private brothers sat in the pit, but the Grand Master, Deputy Grand Master and Grand Wardens in the government's box. The press report implied that the Grand Lodge of Ireland had been in existence for some time. However, the opposite was more probably correct. Although modelled on the Grand Lodge of England, there were some points of difference even in 1725, including the election of Grand Officers by the members of Grand Lodge as a whole. In 1730, John Pennell, later Grand Secretary of the Grand Lodge of Ireland, published the first Irish version of the 1723 Constitutions. He had advertised in George Faulkner's Dublin Journal for a minimum of 200 subscribers, and achieved that without difficulty. His constitutions contain a small number of variations in ritual when compared with that in London, including the prayer at initiation and the function of deacons, a role undertaken in England in part by stewards. For reasons more political than Masonic, these and other variations came to be seen as substantive. In 1751, another edition of the Irish Constitutions was published by Edward Spratt, the Grand Secretary of the Grand Lodge of Ireland. In his dedication to Lord Kingsborough, the Grand Master of Ireland, Spratt makes the point that he should not be considered as the author, but as editor and transcriber, writing that authorship should be ascribed to the learned and ingenious brother, James Anderson. Spratt underlines that there are no essential differences in his volume as compared with the original 1723 constitutions, bar the absence of, quote, those rules that tended to the steward's lodge, since Ireland had no such lodge, quote, a thing not practised here. A schism developed between London and Dublin in the second half of the 18th century, linked to the creation of the Irish-led, London-based Ancients Grand Lodge. Although resolved in 1813 with the creation of the United Grand Lodge of England, the Ancients' influence magnified Irish Freemasonry's tendency towards greater social inclusivity and expanded the number of those who became Freemasons, not just in Ireland and England, but also globally, especially in America. Linked to this was the publication in 1756 of A Heman Raison, The Ancients' Constitutions by the Ancients' Grand Secretary, Lawrence Dermot, which displaced the 1723 Constitutions in Ancients and Irish Lodges, albeit that it too was based on the 1723 Constitutions. Dermot promoted Ancients' Freemasonry by opening up the organisation to a wider membership and ushering in compulsory charity contributions, creating a proto-friendly society. The Irish and ancient Grand Lodges also innovated by issuing travelling warrants, not least to British regiments transiting through Ireland, a move that helped to spread Freemasonry throughout the globe.
Continuing the out and about section, Royal Tour of Care Home. The Grand Master, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, KG, visited a Berkshire care home named after the late Prince Philip to mark its official opening ceremony. Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh Court, the newly opened RMBI Care Company home in Wokingham, welcomed a long-awaited guest when the Grand Master, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, KG, visited. The home provides residential care, nursing and residential dementia support, and the visit marked its official opening. His Royal Highness enjoyed a tour of the facilities with Home Manager Abigail Cranston, RMBI Care Company Managing Director Mark Lloyd, and the chairman of RMBI Care Company, John Boynton, CBE. Residents and staff at the Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh Court had the opportunity to meet the Duke of Kent, who was pleased to greet them all. Afterwards, the Duke of Kent unveiled an engraved stone plaque to commemorate the official opening of the care home. He met with the teams involved in its construction, including RMBI Care Company directors and the architects. He also met representatives of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, the Freemasons charity, led by President James Long and Chairman Sir Paul Williams. The care home is run by RMBI Care Co, part of the MCF, and has been rated good by the Care Quality Commission. For more information, you can visit rmbi.org.uk.
On page 22, Treasures for the Tercentenary. In this special anniversary year of the 1723 Constitutions, the province of Berkshire marks its significance with the commissioning of the Berkshire Heart Egg by Theo Fabergé. As part of its tercentenary celebrations, the province of Berkshire worked hard to provide a new home for its significant treasures, judiciously accumulated over a number of years. Using a significant bequest to its library and museum, the refurbishment project was completed in May 2019 and opened by the then Assistant Grand Master, Sir David Wootton. The Library and Museum, a registered charity, started life in 1896 at the Masonic Hall, Reading. It was created by members of the Greyfriars Lodge with help from members of other Reading lodges. Following its move to the Berkshire Masonic Centre, Sindlesham, in 1969, the contents of the collections were put into storage until a room could be allocated to house the library and museum. The museum collections contain some 3,500 items of ceramics, glassware, regalia, jewels and similar memorabilia, some of which are more than 200 years old. The library houses more than 20,000 books on Freemasonry, including many rare editions, making the collection one of the largest in England. There are also more than 3,000 certificates, prints, postcards, photographs and other archival items, as well as a reference database holding more than 90,000 records. These collections continue to increase in size and provide a valuable resource for reference and research by Freemasons and non-Freemasons alike. Naturally, one of its key exhibits is an original copy of Anderson's The 1723 Constitutions, the centrepiece in this 300th celebration year. While it is rewarding to trace our progress over the past 300 years, there is a need to ensure that modern Freemasonry also records its current practices and peculiarities for future generations. It is with this in mind that, as part of the Berkshire 2023 Festival run for the benefit of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, we thought about commissioning our own special legacy creation. The concept of the Berkshire Heart Egg and Pendant was born. Under the personal direction of Philip Birkenstein, chairman of the St. Petersburg Collection, these unique English hallmarked limited editions were commissioned at no financial risk to the province. Nothing similar has ever been created for Freemasonry or for the Masonic Charitable Foundation. For many years a collector of fine decorative antiques, in 1984, Birkenstein started his association with British craftsman Theo Fabergé, grandson of Carl Fabergé, jeweller to the Tsars of Russia. They became firm friends, and 18 months later their company was created, the result of a unique combination of the design and production skills of Fabergé and Birkenstein's marketing expertise. The Berkshire Heart Egg, which is on permanent display at the Berkshire Museum, Sindelsham, is a limited edition of just 33, reflecting an association with the ancient and accepted rite. Created in Bristol blue crystal, it is based on Theo Fabergé's Egg of the Covenant. The specially designed decorations are sterling silver and hard gold-plated with 18-karat gold and set with rubies. The first amazing reveal is a work of exquisite craftsmanship, reflecting an intricate depiction of the Berkshire heart and oak tree located between celestial and terrestrial globes mounted on pillars. The significance of the globes is well known to Freemasons, depicting Masonry universal. The first reveal is indented on the edge with Freemasonry's core values of integrity, respect, friendship, and charity, often known as brotherly love, relief, and truth, and display the hallmark for sterling silver, including Theo Fabergé's personal mark. The exceptional second reveal depicts an interpretation of a rough and smooth ashlar, indented with gold, placed on a red velvet locator. The locator and the red inserts found within the imperial crown itself allude to the indissoluble link between craft and Royal Arch Freemasonry. The gold-indented triangle on the ashlar reflects the Mark Master's mark of approval of the work as being fitted for its place within the intended structure. In essence, since Freemasons strive for perfection of conduct, it symbolically marks our transition through life, one that is shaped by education, cultivation, and brotherly love. The complimentary Berkshire Heart Pendant, a limited edition of just 100, coincides with Theo Fabergé's centenary and has been conceived from The Dragon's Passion, the first of his fantasy collection, launched in 1991. The inside of the pendant bears on one side the Berkshire heart and oak tree, with the hallmark and edition number on the other. The pendant is made from sterling silver and enamel, with a brilliant cut diamond to the front. Despite a year's delay as a consequence of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, an imperial dinner held at Sindelsham Court on the 18th of September 2021 celebrated the world launch of the spectacular Berkshire Heart Egg and Berkshire Heart Pendant. In the presence of Sir Paul Williams, Deputy President and Chairman of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, 86 guests celebrated the launch and received a presentation on the history of Theo Fabergé and his creations. The sale of eggs and pendants has already secured additional donations to the festival. Thoughts then turned to how the province could appropriately mark the celebration of Her Majesty the Queen's Platinum Jubilee and reflect on the memory of His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh. It came to notice that one egg, the Trafalgar egg, had previously been presented to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II and is permanently housed on HMS Victory in Portsmouth. Two others, the Milestones of Flight egg and the Diamond Battle of Britain propellers, had also been commissioned with the enthusiastic support of His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh. The presentation of a Berkshire heart egg appeared to be an appropriate way forward, and thanks to the generosity of two private sponsors, financially feasible. A single special commission was given, based on the Berkshire heart egg, bearing no serial number, but with a suitable engraved golden base plate. Following advice from the Grand Master, an approach was made to the Master of the Royal Household to determine whether such a gift would be considered appropriate by Her Majesty the Queen. The province was advised that the Master had spoken to Her Majesty and that she would be delighted to receive such a gift. Given the proximity and special nature of Windsor Castle and the Great Park, arrangements were put in hand to make the presentation to the new Constable and Governor of Windsor Castle. Unfortunately, events overtook matters, and the country was rocked to learn of the death of Her Majesty the Queen on the 8th of September 2022, when we entered a period of national mourning. Following discussion within the province and with the governor, it was considered that the sentiments behind the gift were still valid, and that it would be an appropriate mark of respect to present the special Berkshire heart egg to His Majesty King Charles III to celebrate and remember the lives and devoted service of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II and His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh. Appropriately, this base has been engraved simply with the words "To Memories." On Monday the 31st of October at Windsor Castle, the Provincial Grand Master, Anthony Howlett Bolton, and a small team of senior Berkshire Freemasons, together with Philip Birkenstein, made their exceptional presentation of a Berkshire heart egg to the Constable and Governor of Windsor Castle, Phil Jones. Anthony Howlett Bolton said, "We have all been saddened by the recent deaths of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, our longest-serving British sovereign, and His Royal Highness Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh. By making this special presentation to King Charles III, we wish to commemorate their example of service, selfless duty, reassurance and compassion, which was and remains an inspiration to us all. We will remember them with great affection." The following day, the Governor met with His Majesty King Charles III and mentioned the gift. The province has been advised that he was fascinated and appreciative. The Berkshire heart egg is now in transit to the King's private office. Although something of a rollercoaster ride from conception to fruition, the province has more than fulfilled its original intention and has laid down a small legacy piece from the current era for others to muse and to delight over in the decades to come. A limited number remain available for commission by discerning collectors. Contact Jerry Preston, Provincial Grand Charity Steward, by email at pgcs@barkspgl.org.uk.
And continuing in this out and about section of the magazine, we start our usual trek around the different provinces in the country, starting this time with Cheshire. To raise funds for the Cheshire Festival, the province looked at ways for all local Freemasons to take part and decided on a virtual walk along the famous Route 66. They aimed to cover 2,280 miles in August. Despite the heatwave in the first week, the team walked 613 miles. Week 2 saw them complete a further 665 miles, and on week 3 they added another 648 miles. On day 25, they surpassed their goal and reached the end of the Highway of America, Santa Monica, California. On day 27, at 10 a.m, a group headed by Area 2 Assistant Provincial Grandmaster Steve Christian decided to finish with a flourish, walking from the Masonic Hall in Birkenhead to the hall in City Centre Chester. That's just over 16 miles. On the 31st of August, the team finished with a total of 2,740 miles under its belt, 460 miles over the target. The additional mileage saw the team take a virtual wander down Mexico Way to Tijuana, back up over the border and to the outskirts of Las Vegas, Nevada. More importantly, £4,144.75 was added to the Cheshire 2027 festival total.
Number 2. Cumbria. Take a break. Freemasons in Cumbria have raised £5,000 for charity Carer Support South Lakes to help unpaid carers in South Cumbria. Members of Trinity Lodge in Kendal organised the fundraising as a thank you to the charity for supporting the partner of one of its members who has terminal cancer. The fundraising took place during a cheese and wine evening organised by Scott Walmsley and his wife Mel. Scott is a member of Trinity Lodge number 6730 in Kendal. They were helped by Joanne Jardine, who was diagnosed with terminal cancer in 2022. The charity has been supporting her daughter as a young carer. The event raised £3,045 and a further £1,995 was provided by charity platform Big Give, reaching an incredible £5,040. Scott and Joanne have thanked the businesses that supported the evening with raffle prizes and generous offers. All money goes to Carer Support South Lakes Give Carers a Break appeal, which helps provide respite for unpaid carers, many of whom struggle to get any time away from their caring responsibilities.
Number 3, Derbyshire. Derbyshire Freemasons have said goodbye to the last dambuster George Leonard Johnny Johnson, MBE DFC, who died on the 7th of December, aged 101. Johnson was born in Lincolnshire in 1921 and joined the RAF in 1940. He was the last surviving member of the famous 617 Squadron, otherwise known as the Dam Busters, having been selected in 1943 to take part in Operation Chastise at 22 years of age. He was the bomb aimer on T-Tommy, while the pilot was American Joe McCarthy. The squadron was under the command of Wing Commander Guy Gibson and was the first to deploy the bouncing bomb, the brainchild of Barnes Wallace, who was born in Ripley, Derbyshire. Following his retirement from the RAF in 1962, having attained the rank of squadron leader, Johnson moved to Torquay with his wife Gwyn and became a teacher as well as a local councillor. His relationship with Derbyshire Freemasons goes back to 2018. To celebrate the 100th anniversary of the RAF, the 100th anniversary of the end of the First World War, and the 75th anniversary in 2018 of the Dambusters raid, Derbyshire Freemasons were honoured to receive him at a special meeting held at the Grange in Littleover, where he made generous presentations to Derbyshire Air Cadets on behalf of Derbyshire Freemasons. Johnson was received by Provincial Grand Master for Derbyshire Stephen Varley, supported by a team of provincial officers and accompanied by the Dam Busters March. He spoke to everyone and was a humble man with a wonderful sense of humour. In a speech, Johnson paid tribute to those he flew with and told the cadets they were the RAF's future and that the future was in good hands. Stephen paid tribute to Johnson. Derbyshire Freemasons, he said, have lost a much-loved friend who had visited us in 2018 and supported our initiative to help every air cadet squadron in Derbyshire. He was an inspiration to us all. His generous spirit was remarkable.
Number 4. Devonshire. Help for Ukraine. Miles Coverdale Lodge, number 5069, has donated £500 to the Torbay Ukraine Support Community Interest Company, CIC, a charity that helps the Ukrainian refugee community settle in the UK through a programme of education. The CIC's director and chair, Dr. David Harwood, said, "We are most grateful for this donation from the Freemasons of Miles Coverdale Lodge. It will enable us to continue to deliver language lessons to our visitors through our education programme. We hold Saturday clubs to support 46 adults by delivering both French and English language lessons. Some of our Ukrainian friends are now working, so we hold 4 language classes a day from morning through to evening in order to accommodate those that have jobs." CIC's vice chair, Simon Chapman, said, "Our aim is to remove barriers to education. The local Baptist and Catholic churches provide accommodation free of charge for our Saturday clubs, and we have retired teachers providing childcare in one room while the parents and other adults learn in another. We also work alongside Safeway's Torbay CIC to provide a safe place for our Ukrainian friends to discuss what they are going through and provide facilities to support those missing their family." Worshipful Master of Miles Coverdale Lodge, Steve Batt, said, "The Torbay Ukraine Support CIC is doing a tremendous job, and we are pleased to be able to assist in a small way to help bring some stability during this terrible time for our Ukrainian friends."
Dorset next. Equine therapy. Andrew Ward has completed a successful year as a Master of the Lodge of Honour and Friendship number 1266. During his time, he has raised funds for several charities, one being Green Cottage Riding for the Disabled Association, RDA. His daughter, Jessica, has enjoyed riding there for a number of years. The RDA enriches the lives of disabled children through horse riding therapy, helping them to achieve personal goals, boosting core strength, confidence and self-esteem. Andrew's Lodge raised £1,700, which was presented to Sue Munro, Chair of the Trustees of Riding for the Disabled. Andrew spoke of the impact that Green Cottage RDA has had on his family. We've been supported by Green Cottage RDA for more than 10 years. Our eldest daughter, Jessica, has a unique chromosome rearrangement, which has resulted in global development delay. The physical benefits of horse riding are immense, but so too is the confidence that children get from being around animals. Our lodge has supported Green Cottage for many years, and being master gave me the opportunity to have it as one of our charities for the year. I'd like to thank all of the members of and visitors to 1266 this year who have raised this money, and also thank the amazing volunteers who help change the lives of young people and their families.
Number 6. East Kent. Small Steps. Honour Oak Lodge, number 1986 of East Kent Freemasons, has announced its sponsorship of Grace, a 4-year-old girl from Chatham who has been attending Step and Learn since she was only a few months old, having suffered 2 strokes in her first week of life. Step and Learn is a charity dedicated to the physical and educational improvements of children with cerebral palsy and associated motor difficulties. The service it provides is not available on the NHS, but is nonetheless provided free of charge to those that need it. Although based in Medway, there are currently 51 children benefiting from this service from across the whole of Kent, and a further 6 waiting to be assessed. Honour Oak made the announcement following its annual Christmas party, which has been held in aid of Step and Learn since 2013. More than 120 people attended the party at the Howard Memorial Hall, Wigmore, on the 4th of December, where the children and their families were guests of the lodge. Honour Oak donated £1,250, and a further £1,000 was provided in match funding by their friends at Lloyds Bank. The lodge will now be sponsoring Grace's sessions at Step and Learn on a continuing basis. A positive and proactive approach is adopted by Step and Learn. It encourages a child to say, "I can," rather than "I can't." The charity respects and values parental contributions and puts them at the forefront of their child's development, helping them to adopt the programs for use in the home, turning the skills learned into a meaningful array of abilities that will help in their everyday life.
Number 7 is Essex. 2 Essex Freemasons have visited the Grand Lodge of Missouri as the culmination of 10 years of Masonic visits to the United States. The story goes back to 2011, when a group accepted an invitation to visit lodges in Missouri and Illinois. The arrangements were made by Jeff Bennett, a past provincial Grand Senior Deacon and holder of Senior London Grand rank. The team comprises various members, with 4 from the Metropolitan Grand Lodge, 3 from the Province of Essex, 1 from each of the provinces of West Kent and Cambridgeshire, and 1 from the Grand Lodge of Illinois, who joined the team when in the United States and took the role of the candidate. In April 2012, the English Third Degree was demonstrated in the Tucson Lodge Temple in St. Louis, in association with St. Louis Lodge No. 1. Their host was Ty G. Trutlar. The temple was full of Freemasons from Missouri and adjacent states, as well as many Prince Hall lodges. Since then, they've remained in contact with the Freemasons, and in particular with Tri Tutelar, who appointed and installed as Grand Master in Missouri in 2021. The Essex Freemasons were invited to his installation, but the COVID pandemic unfortunately prevented it. The invite was extended to October last year, and the installation of Right Worshipful Brother Richard W. Kayser as Grand Master. The trip was made possible by the generosity of the Grand Lodge of Missouri. At the convocation meeting, the Essex Freemasons presented 3 historic books to the Grand Librarian, as well as a handmade personal gavel to Ty Tutelar and another to Richard Kayser. They were delighted to demonstrate friendship in Freemasonry between countries.
Number 8. Gloucestershire. Framing a Memory. A special occasion has been captured in a painting presented to Freemason Norman Weeks, past master of Tyndall Lodge and later Lodge of St. Christopher. The moment goes back to 2016, when Gloucestershire Freemasons travelled to the Royal National Memorial Arboretum at Ulrawas for the unveiling of the Gulf War Memorial. Norman was one of those attending, particularly poignant as his son, squadron leader Kevin Weeks, who was also a Tyndall Lodge member, had tragically lost his life. Fellow Freemasons, Paul Wilmot and Jeff Cave, led the fundraising that made it possible for all the veterans and families of the fallen to be able to visit and lay a wreath, or just have a quiet period of reflection. "I remember the day so clearly," said Andy Down, past master of Kendalshire Lodge. "Having served in that conflict, it was an honour to be at the very front of a crowd of some 5,000 or more veterans and families. I will always be grateful to the old codger, as he is affectionately known. I recounted this tale to my good friend, Captain George Harrell, who is a military artist. He immediately offered to put something on canvas, purely for the cost of the materials. After a few months, it was ready. The picture has the memorial in its centre, surrounded by a wreath of 47 poppies, representing each of the souls we lost in the campaign. With respect to the old codger, we placed a further single poppy on the tail fin of the RAF Tornado, the very aircraft in which Kevin perished. We can also see armoured vehicles, a Challenger tank, a 432 ambulance to represent my own Royal Army Medical Corps, and a Royal Navy Lynx helicopter. The picture was presented to Norman at Tyndall Lodge's installation meeting, on the instruction of the incoming master, Phil Robinson.
Next, Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Hitting the right note. The Lodge of Brevity in the province of Hampshire and Isle of Wight put on a white table event before Christmas and were entertained by the Portsmouth Military Wives Choir. A full house at the meeting held in the Masonic Centre in Chandler's Ford enjoyed a repertoire of carols and other songs. The choir is one of many military wives choirs across the country that were created in 2012 and have charitable status. The Lodge of Brevity was consecrated in 2015 as one of the many specialist lodges in the province. It was specifically designed for working men who didn't have the time to attend meetings with typical early start times. Meetings are short, as are the after proceedings. At the end of the event, worshipful Master Nasser Drees presented the choir with £500 on behalf of the Lodge and the Masonic Charitable Foundation, the MCF, the Freemasons charity. The money will enable the choir to continue to entertain people in the area and bring them a great deal of joy. Nasser said, "The choir were brilliant. They sounded sensational. It was a pleasure to present them with a cheque that they weren't expecting." And also in Hampshire and Isle of Wight, we've got a second article. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance received an uplifting donation from the Southern Chapter of the Widow's Sons Masonic Bikers Association. This means the bikers have donated more than £32,000. Without donations, the helicopter would not be able to fly and save lives. It costs more than £3,000 for each takeoff. Provincial Grand Master John Whittaker, who volunteers for St John Ambulance, said it was lovely to hear that the chapter is one of the Air Ambulance's most loyal fundraising partners. The Air Ambulance service is a lifesaver.
Number 10. Leicestershire and Rutland. Social Club. In 2019, a group of avid tweeters discussed the possibility of forming a special interest lodge aimed at those who use social media platforms. With Freemasons from all over the country and beyond showing an interest, London was chosen as a central point to begin looking at how the dream could become a reality. A local lodge that was struggling with numbers was identified and a plan put in place to transform the future of the lodge to a special interest social media one. The Lodge of Faith and Friendship number 7326 was chosen, and a small team worked through the logistics of changing the fortunes and direction of the lodge. With many interested in joining, all was going to plan. Then the pandemic hit. Zoom meetings, phone calls and tweets kept the interest in the new lodge going until the first meeting of the new members was due to be held. The lodge meets just 3 times a year, twice in London, with the third meeting in the province of the Master. In 2021, this was held in the province of Dorset with the then-master Mark Burstow. The next master, Leicester's Provincial Grand Communications Officer Richard Barnett, was to host the lodge in the province. The date was set for the 29th of November 2022 at Freemasons Hall, Leicester, and members made their way there from far-flung corners of the UK. There was a fascinating talk by Leicestershire and Rutland's David Hughes, and the assistant provincial Grand Master was on hand with his camera. The lodge members and guests then made their way over the road to enjoy a superb meal at the Mumbai Inn restaurant. The next action for the lodge is a name change, with Sialia, the social media lodge, set to become the new name. It will have the fitting lodge motto of Faith and Friendship Around the World as a tribute to its former title.
Now, Lincolnshire. On New Year's Day, Lincolnshire Freemason Chris Jones set off on an 18-month challenge to walk the entire coastline of Great Britain. The purpose of this 7,000-mile trek is to clear his mind of mental health issues and to raise money for the Masonic Charitable Foundation, which he is convinced saved his life as he struggled through a mental health crisis. He hopes to raise £100,000 to give to the MCF through the Lincolnshire 2025 Festival. The money will come from donations and from sales of a book he hopes to write about his journey. As part of his coastal trek, Chris intends to visit as many Masonic centres as possible. He'll return home for visits in March, May and October, and for important events such as installing his successor as Master of the Freewheelers Motorcycle Lodge. "I'm very open about my struggle with mental health, and this is the main focus of the challenge," explained Chris. "Back in 2020, I was at my lowest, and my wife Michelle eventually convinced me to seek help. I contacted the NHS and started a counselling programme, but it was hopeless. The mental health team was overworked and counselling sessions were often cancelled or moved at the last minute. I can't remember why I was looking at the MCF website, but I noticed a link to a mental health support programme. I called the number and 35 minutes later received a call back from a mental health specialist. We talked for more than an hour. She set me up on a counselling programme, and I have no doubt that her persistence and understanding and thoroughness saved my life. For more details and to offer help, contact Chris on cjones, C-J-O-N-E-S, at fwlodge.org.
Number 12. Monmouthshire. Comfort in a crisis. Thousands of Ukrainian refugees across England and Wales will be receiving practical support thanks to a grant of £500,000 raised by Monmouthshire and other provinces in partnership with UK community foundations. The grant follows a similar £500,000 grant in April 2022 to the British Red Cross, UNICEF and other organisations working with Ukrainian refugees in Ukraine, Poland, Romania and Moldova. A separate donation of £50,000 was made shortly after the Russian invasion. This latest grant means that Freemasons have given more than £1 million to Ukrainian refugees since the war began. The new programme of grants will see 10 community foundations supporting local charities and community organisations that are providing immediate support for refugees arriving from Ukraine, as well as those who are developing longer-term support for the integration of Ukrainians already here. Rosemary MacDonald, CEO of UK Community Foundations, said, "We're very grateful to the Freemasons charity for its generous grant that will provide a major boost to local charities that are doing so much to welcome Ukrainians into their communities." Richard G. Davies from Monmouthshire Freemasons said, "I'm pleased we've been able to provide substantial assistance to Ukrainians in need across the country. There has been an unprecedented wave of support for Ukrainians from the British public, but there is a great deal more that needs to be done. These are people who have left everything behind in a country that is suffering the effects of a devastating war. I'm proud of the help Monmouthshire Freemasons have provided in pushing the total amount raised to more than £1 million."
Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire next. The Masonic Centre in Eton Socon, St Neots, has made great strides in the battle against increasing utility bills, with a solar solution now in place. In 2009, the operative Grand Master Masons, utilising the Footing Corner Stone Fund, purchased the building at 166 Great North Road from Euston Lodge. The premises are also used for the headquarters for the operative order, so any building improvements are only undertaken with their approval and support. Several building works had been identified, including replacing the asbestos roof, the undercroft brought into proper use, and the building electrics refurbished, with all the lighting being replaced with LED alternatives. That project was carried out between April and November 2022 and gave a window of opportunity for the Centre Rooms Committee in Euston Lodge, in particular, working with the owners to consider the addition of a solar solution on the roof. In August 2022, Euston Lodge confirmed an investment of £35,000 in a 17.5-kilowatt photovoltaic solar array on the south-facing elevation of the roof of the Masonic Centre building. In addition, a 22-kilowatt battery solution was added to capture excess solar energy and provide power when there's lots of cloud cover. Mick Marks, MBE, who oversaw the project work, said the forecast return on the investment is 6 years and the life of the equipment is expected to be more than 25 years. The estimated yearly carbon reduction will be 5,148 kilograms. That's equivalent to the carbon reduction of 236 trees. The installation took less than 5 days to complete and commission. The lodge building is now predominantly off-grid for much of its energy usage. Chair of the Euston Rooms Committee, Jim Clement, past Provincial Senior Grand Warden, said, "It's early days, but first indications suggest that we'll be pleased with the investment that's been made by the trustees of Euston Lodge in this installation. Our thanks go to the Grand Master Masons, GMM, as owners of the building, and in particular, Mick Marks, who has acted on behalf of the GMMs as project manager, without whose support this scheme may not have evolved."
Number 14. Northumberland. Flying start. 2 years of delay finally came to an end when David Armstrong took the chance to jump out of an aircraft at 15,000 feet in aid of Teddy's for Loving Care, raising more than £1,000 for the charity. Taking place at Sky High Skydiving, based in Shotton Colliery near Peterlee, Durham, David reached speeds of 120 miles per hour while free-falling for 9,000 feet prior to the parachute being deployed. David, a Freemason of 26 years and the master of Seton Delaval Lodge No. 4617, is an associate lecturer in nursing at Northumbria University. For many years prior to his retirement in July 2014, he was a senior lecturer in nursing. He was also a member of the Army Reserve for 27 years, with his penultimate role being that of commanding officer of 335 Medical Evacuation Regiment. Teddy's for Loving Care provides cuddly bears to calm children down in hospital, reward them for being brave, or to demonstrate procedures. The bears distract children so nurses and doctors can get their jobs done efficiently. The work of TLC is funded through the generous donations of Freemasons, their families, and supporters. David said, "I thoroughly enjoyed the experience. It's an amazing feeling free-falling for 9,000 feet, but with no sensation of travelling vertically towards the earth at 120 miles per hour, apart from the noise of the wind and feeling cold. It was an amazing way to mark my 65th birthday, although it was 2 years after the event. It was so kind of my sons and their families to fund the jump, and my wife to fund the photo and video package presented at my lodge, and making the effort to be at the venue and support me. My wife is still getting over it. Best of all, though, is that their generosity, along with that of all of my sponsors, has raised more than £1,000 for Teddy's for Loving Care."
North Wales next. Provincial Grand Master John Charles Holt consecrated Cwfrinfra Cwnan No. 10013 at Bangor Masonic Hall on Friday the 20th of January. Attended by more than 100 founding members, it was a special moment in the history of North Wales Freemasons, thanks to the consecration of the first Welsh-speaking lodge in the province. Winford Owen Davies, Deputy PGM, who was inducted as the founding worshipful master by Assistant PGM Phil James, presented a donation of £1,000 on behalf of the members to the 2028 festival. Afterwards, guests were treated to a sumptuous lunch, with the best of North Wales hospitality providing a warm welcome.
Number 16. Nottinghamshire. Bikes and brunch. A Brethren's Big Brunch was held at the Acacia Centre, Ansley Woodhouse, by Clumber Lodge, number 8199, in October. It was an opportunity for an informal meet and greet, and a chance for anyone thinking of joining Freemasonry to find out a bit more. It also seemed a good event for the Widow's Sons Masonic Bikers Association, WSMBA, to go along and support. After checking with the organiser, Sean Hayfield, around 20 bikers attended. Most of the WSMBA social events are open to partners, friends and children, and this really fitted in with the big brunch, which was a real family event. Any bikers who are interested in getting involved with the East Midlands chapter of the WSMBA, representing Nottinghamshire, Derbyshire and Leicestershire, can reach out by email at the following address: president@eastmids.wsmba.uk. The group holds a breakfast meeting every third Sunday at Shardlow Marina, where you're welcome to drop in for a chat.
Now, Somerset. Somerset Freemason Mike Gagg and his wife Leslie's trip to Costa Rica could so easily have ended up in tragedy were it not for the kindness of Freemasons. In March 2022, Mike and Leslie flew to Costa Rica for a two-week stay at Tamarindo, a resort on the west coast. The day before their return, on the 6th of April, Mike was rushed to hospital in Liberia, the provincial capital of Guanacaste. Within 48 hours, he was critically ill with bacterial pneumonia. For 6 weeks, Mike's life hung in the balance. Eventually, Mike was well enough to be flown home by air ambulance with a full medical team and transferred to Musgrove Park Hospital, Taunton, where he remained for a further 5 weeks. At the point of return to the UK, Leslie was found to be COVID positive and had to quarantine for a further week before following Mike home to the UK. Mike reports that during the time he was in hospital in Costa Rica, Leslie was living in a basic motel nearby. Her anxiety and stress were heightened because she didn't speak Spanish. His medical team was very good in trying to keep Leslie informed of his condition, but it was very difficult at first as she had no support in Costa Rica. Mike's family in England worked hard to sort out insurance cover for the mounting costs and, together with family friends, were in constant contact but couldn't offer much practical help. Mike's home Masonic lodges were aware of the need for local support and, with the assistance of the UGLE Grand Chancellor's team, contacted the Grand Lodge of Costa Rica. Rudy Corrales Vega, the Grand Secretary, promptly arranged support from Dr. Efren Molino, past Grand Master, who is a doctor. He had many long discussions with Mike's medical team to ensure that all was well with the treatment. He also spoke to Mike's daughter in England to ease her mind. Most Costa Rican Masons are based in the capital city, San Jose, a five-hour drive from Liberia, where Mike was in hospital. Nevertheless, they promised to go to the hospital any time they were needed. Sergio Reyes, who provided support to needy brethren and their dependents, kept himself updated on proceedings and offered support to Leslie. Somerset Freemasons have since provided more practical help. Adrian Robson, provincial Grand Almoner, sourced a wheelchair for Mike, while St Dunstan's Lodge provided a banister rail, which was installed by Mark Ackerman. In gratitude for the help received from the Grand Lodge of Costa Rica, Mike's mother lodge, Gerard Lodge number 8999, sent an engraved shield as a thank you. Mike and his family also gave thanks to the United Grand Lodge of England for arranging contact with Freemasons in Costa Rica and to their many Masonic friends who were so supportive. These are, in particular, Robert O'Malley White, Somerset's Mark Provincial Almoner, and Stuart Hadler, past Provincial Grand Master for Somerset, who is the Almoner for Gerard Lodge, both of whom actively supported the family throughout.
Number 18. Staffordshire. Fully equipped. Thanks to a £30,000 grant from Staffordshire Freemasons to charity New Life, 20 children and young people with disabilities and their families will be able to access potentially life-changing specialist equipment. New Life is the largest charity provider of specialist equipment for children with disabilities or terminal illness across the UK. It supports families to access wheelchairs, specialist beds, car seats, walking and standing frames, and communication aids. As well as an equipment grant service, New Life provides an emergency equipment loan service, a play therapy pod service, and a nurse-led helpline that supports families across a range of different subjects. Children across the UK can be supported by New Life up to their 19th birthday, and each child can be helped multiple times. The £30,000 grant from Freemasons will support New Life's equipment grants service, often not available on the NHS. Each application is supported by a medical professional, and the equipment can be used to help keep a child safe, reduce pain, aid development or mobility, or help them achieve their full potential. The grant comes through the Masonic Charitable Foundation. Selwyn Burton, Staffordshire Freemasons Communications Officer, said, "I'm very pleased we've been able to help New Life with its important work. Without it, thousands of disabled children would be living in pain, unable to do the things that we all take for granted, and denied the opportunity to reach their potential." Sarah Sylvester, New Life's Head of Philanthropy, said, "We're very grateful to Staffordshire Freemasons for their generous grant that will allow us to provide specialist equipment to 20 children and their families. Whether it's a wheelchair or a car seat to help them get around, a communication aid, or some other vital piece of equipment, our work makes a real difference to disabled children's quality of life." Staffordshire Freemasons were represented by Dr. John Skellen, the charity steward, Reg Sargent, this year's junior grand warden, and Selwyn Burton, communications officer.
Surrey next. Rajinder Tumba, MBE, of Covenham Lodge number 4212, organised a charity gala Black Tie Ball in November to raise vital funds for their ongoing work with the Spencer's Legacy, Nobody Left Behind campaign. Founder Steve Damon and his wife Gloria were among the guests at the event to mark the 40th anniversary of their son Spencer's death from meningitis and the start of the meningitis movement in the UK. The charity aims to raise £320,000 to fund research into a new vaccine and is already halfway to reaching that target. Rajinder himself contracted meningitis 12 years ago at the age of 27, so knows only too well the devastating effects of the disease. "In my fight against meningitis in 2010, wisdom taught me that charitable endeavour forms life's keystone," says Rajinder. "This keystone needs support, and what better support than Freemasonry's three core principles, brotherly love, relief, and truth. I wanted my year as worshipful master to truly embody these principles. With the Covenham Charity Gala, I brought this embodiment to fruition. As a result, people's lives are being saved." And also in Surrey, the Big Handshake. Guildford Rugby Football Club will see more than 2,000 people take part in an attempt to create the longest ever relay handshake on the 3rd of June. This is being done in partnership with Surrey Scouts and Guildford Rugby Club to help raise funds for new Surrey Scouts facilities. There will also be stalls and music, but to make the relay handshake challenge work, they need as many people registering and taking part as possible. Can you put a group together to join the challenge? If you can, then go to www.bighandshake.org.uk.
Number 20. Sussex. On the High Seas. Newly initiated Sussex Freemasons Matt Garman, Neil Firminger and Steve Woolley took on the gruelling Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge in December, sailing from the Canary Islands to Antigua. The team of three dads called their team Ocean Dadventure in a bid to show that life begins at 40, or 50. Between them, they've competed in CrossFit Games, climbed mountains, finished Ironman challenges, and competed in endurance swimming events. This was their biggest challenge yet, but all the more worthy as the team was raising money for both the WOLO Foundation and Prostate Cancer UK, charities close to their hearts. They completed the first 1,000 miles in 18 days, having spent Christmas aboard with a unique Christmas lunch of reindeer stew. Around 15 days later, on the 14th of January, they hit the 2,000-mile mark. This grueling feat of physical and mental strength tested the trio to their limits, but regular check-ins with family and a camaraderie that can only be found under the most challenging of conditions gave them the drive, resilience and tenacity to push through. By the time they reached English Harbour in Antigua, the trio had rowed well over 3,000 miles, raising more than £16,000 for their chosen charities.
West Lancashire. Freemasons from West Lancashire have recently returned from a lodge trip to Vilnius, Lithuania. The travellers of Bryn Lodge number 6553 have a tradition of visiting a lodge in a different jurisdiction every year. The visits started in 2000 and only COVID caused a blip in the tradition. The plan is, where possible, to visit an English-speaking lodge, and this last visit was no different. Vilnius Arch Lodge number 10 under the Grand Lodge of Lithuania was identified, and after following the protocols between the respective Grand Lodges, a fraternal visit was arranged. Vilnius Arch Lodge was established in 2018 to serve members wishing to practice their Freemasonry in the English language. The visitors were looked after and entertained by the members, some of whom were founders. They pulled out all the stops to ensure full enjoyment and experience, including taking visitors on a city tour and giving an insight into its history and culture. The members of the lodge were perfect hosts, but most kindly asked not to be photographed or referred to personally in any publicity, apart from the worshipful master. This is quite common in Eastern Europe. It appears that attitudes in Lithuania are not as liberal towards Freemasonry as they are in the UK, and their wishes were rigorously adhered to. Freemasonry in Lithuania dates to 1776, and by 1781 there were three lodges operating in Vilnius. During the Russian occupation it was banned and didn't return until independence in 1990. It was in 2002 that the Grand Lodge of Lithuania was formed, which is now recognised and in amity with UGLE. On the day of the lodge meeting, in a hall outside the centre of Kaunas, a plaque on the wall greeted visitors, which read, "Brother Mason, if you have come from anywhere in the world, this is your home." After meeting the members and visiting those from other Lithuanian lodges, an initiation ceremony took place. Although it's the intention of the lodge to adopt emulation ritual, it currently uses ceremony adapted from the German ritual. It was a wonderful spectacle, full of drama. The consensus among English Masons was that it was special to witness, but unrecognisable from the structured ritual they were used to. Chris Williams, Worshipful Master of Bryn Lodge, presented the Worshipful Master of Vilnius Arch Lodge with an engraved wooden gavel as a memento of the visit. Following the ceremony, it was time for a festive board. As the lodge was due to move to emulation, two of the Bryn members, Assistant Provincial Grand Master David Ogden and Provincial Grand Communications Officer Barry Dickinson, were invited to explain its practical application in the Bryn Lodge.
Number 22. Yorkshire North and East Riding. A new start. At least 120 local children and young people who have been victims of domestic and sexual abuse will receive the help and support they need, thanks to a grant of £57,000 from Yorkshire North and East Riding Freemasons to the EVA Women's Aid charity. The grant will fund an additional counsellor to enable the charity to increase its capacity to help more children. The counsellor will offer sessions for as long as the child needs them and will be free of charge. Children involved in domestic violence and sexual abuse can be withdrawn, unhappy, and struggle to form relationships. They are more at risk of becoming embroiled in unhealthy relationships themselves, may have difficulty recognizing and managing their emotions, struggle to express themselves, and can adopt harmful coping strategies. The impact of abuse can be devastating. For children and young people who may not easily have the language to express themselves, it takes time and patience to develop the positive working relationship with the counsellor before they are able to begin talking about the abuse they have suffered. EVA's team of counsellors have a range of approaches, techniques and tools at their disposal to help children through their cope and recovery journey. EVA Women's Aid provides specialist support to victims of domestic abuse and sexual violence throughout Redcar and Cleveland. Established in 1987, it works with more than 1,000 people every year through its services, including safe house accommodation, accredited programs, schools workshops, family work, and a counselling service for women, children and young people. The grant from Yorkshire North and East Riding Freemasons comes through the Masonic Charitable Foundation.
And the last province is Yorkshire West Riding. Freemasons from the Lodge of Dawn, number 6511 in Leeds, have offered their support to Let's Eat, a local food bank. It was one of the Lodge of Dawn's newest members, Owen Byrne, who suggested they start a monthly collection, and after putting forward a proposal to the Lodge committee, they chose to work with Let's Eat. This is run by the Chapel Town Youth Development Centre, the CFYDC, for whom the Lodge had previously secured a grant to build an all-weather sports pitch. Once contact was made with CFYDC, service manager Will Bowler sent the Lodge a shopping list of the key items they needed. The first drop-off collection was agreed for the regular December ceremony. However, before the in-person collection was due to take place, members immediately started emailing and texting to pledge and donate cash towards the fund. Within 3 days of its announcement, almost £600 had been collected. Knowing that CFYDC's final food collection of the year was the day after the proposed drop-off collection, it was decided to make sure that supplies were with them as soon as possible so they could start getting food parcels together. Owen shopped around to find where the Lodge could get the best value for money, and an order was placed, which arrived at the end of the first week of the initiative. On Friday, the 16th of December, before the in-lodge collection had even begun, the first batch was delivered to CFYDC. It totaled 24 crates of food. At the collection, at the lodge meeting on Tuesday, the 20th of December, members arrived with even more donations. The crates that had been purchased to store the foodstuff were overflowing. The food was dropped off to CFYDC the following day so that every item could be made available before Christmas. Owen said it was overwhelming to see the selflessness and generosity of the brethren over the past few weeks as we started our partnership with CFYDC. It's our plan for this to be the start of a relationship that lasts until food banks like this are no longer needed. In the meantime, we'll do what we can every month to ensure that the people of Chapeltown who might fall on hard times have a little less to worry about.
And finally, number 24, Opera in the Round. Freemasons Hall is delighted to welcome the Regent's Opera Company to the Grand Temple in May. This leading fringe opera company will be performing Wagner's Die Walküre, arranged for 18 orchestral players and performed in the round. This is part of a large operatic collaboration between Freemasons Hall and Regent's Opera that will culminate in two complete ring cycles in 2024. Conducted by Ben Woodward, Die Walküre stars Kiel Watson as Wotan and Catherine Woodward as Brunhilde. The performances take place on Sunday the 21st, Tuesday the 23rd and Saturday the 27th of May. Tickets are available at ticketsource.co.uk/regents-opera.
The next item in this extended out and about section is a warm welcome. The Haven of Peace Lodge number 4385 in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, celebrates its centenary. Over the weekend of the 28th to the 30th of October 2022, the Haven of Peace Lodge number 4385, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, celebrated 100 years of continued Freemasonry in the country under the auspices of the District Grand Lodge of East Africa. The weekend was meticulously planned by the Centenary Committee, in particular Mustafa K. Sulemanji, Commander-in-Chief of the occasion. The Lodge has a fascinating history. Shortly after World War I, the territory formerly known as German Tanganyika was under the control of the East African Expedition Force. Permission was sought for a military lodge of instruction, an LOI, in Dar es Salaam for the Lodge of East Africa number 3007 in Zanzibar in March 1918. A subsequent meeting was held on the 9th of March 1918 and deemed to be one of the few, if not the only one, that Freemasons held in a capital city on enemy territory, as recorded in the minutes. Unfortunately, after a few more meetings, the LOI was closed in December 1918. Undeterred, a group of Freemasons applied for a charter in February 1921 for a regular lodge. This was granted on the 6th of December 1921 and consecrated on 31st of March 1922 by W. E. Hayworth and the first master of the lodge, W. T. Storm. The Haven of Peace Lodge, number 4385, has been meeting in Dar es Salaam ever since. Celebrations kicked off with a dinner for all visiting brethren and their spouses, together with members of Haven of Peace Lodge. On Saturday morning, they held an emergency meeting to receive their centenary warrant from the District Grand Master, Dr. Virendra K. Talwar, MBS. To commemorate the historic occasion, the District Grand Master planted two trees in the garden of the temple grounds. The ceremony was conducted with the normal precision and formality of such a great occasion. Indeed, the entrance by the District Grand Lodge officers into the temple to receive the DGM was a joy to watch and an example to the newer members of how much work and practice is required for such a ceremony. With the meeting concluded, the brethren had a short time to recuperate and prepare themselves for the dinner and dance banquet at the Hyatt Kilimanjaro Hotel in Dar es Salaam, rounding off what was a most enjoyable weekend. Brethren donated a range of charity prizes, from safari holidays to Apple watches, an outward show of the qualities of benevolence and charity. Over 100 years, the lodge has built its own temple, consisting of 3 English lodges, 1 Scottish lodge, 2 chapters and a vibrant LOI, along with ritual workings that would not look out of place at the Emulation Lodge of Improvement, Freemasons Hall, London. And if any brethren are ever visiting Tanzania, you will be assured of a hearty welcome, great ritual, plentiful food, and a little tipple of your favourite beverage.
On page 42, Deep Sea Healing. An Army veteran and expert diver, Freemason Kevin James tells the inspiring story of how he's helped military PTSD sufferers using therapeutic deep sea diving techniques. With their sun-drenched beaches and dazzling blue seas, the islands of the Bahamas and Turks and Caicos are a tonic for the mind and body. And it's with this in mind that Kevin James made the decision to marry his technical expertise with what the Bahamas naturally offers, magnificent diving, to provide therapy to veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. A founding member of Yuma Lodge on Long Island within the District Grand Lodge of Bahamas and Turks, Kevin is a British Army veteran who served as a military policeman and then as a physical training instructor specializing in scuba diving. Along with other trustees, he runs a registered charity called PTSD, Progress Through Scuba Diving. It all began in 2011 when I read an article about how diving improved feelings in paralyzed individuals by up to 15%, said Kevin. Hidden deep within the study from the Johns Hopkins University Hospital in Maryland, doctors suggested they had discovered accidental improvements in PTSD symptoms of between 85 and 100%. When someone witnesses a traumatic incident, the body releases cortisol to deal with a stressful situation. In some cases, it is thought to coat the feel-good receptors in the brain, causing crippling symptoms. Kevin has been reliably informed that serotonin, the body's feel-good chemical, and nitrogen breathed at depth, could be scrubbing clean these receptors or simply removing the cortisol from the brain, reducing symptoms of anxiety, depression, and insomnia. The voluntary therapy is paid for through generous donations. Most recently, I've helped Staffordshire Freemason Matt Trigg, who was suffering from PTSD, said Kevin. I was trying to work out how I was going to raise more than £3,000 for his flights and accommodation. I know from helping previous veterans, so far half of them have been Freemasons, that it can be done. It will be no surprise that the response from Freemasons was generous. One offered his air miles to cover Matt's flights. The British Sub Aqua Lodge, number 8997, kindly donated for the internal Bahamas flights. The District Grand Lodge of the Bahamas and Turks put out a message, and the generous response took care of the accommodation on Long Island. In addition, a friend of Kevin's, who is the South Africa Assistant District Grand Master, paid for an overnight hotel in Nassau. Matt's PTSD symptoms manifested themselves in a lack of confidence due to his injuries and a sort of brain fog, which kept him from going out and enjoying life. After a few days, he was sleeping better, cracking jokes, and more animated than on arrival. We completed about 15 dives. Most of them were between 100 and 160 feet. Happily, Matt went home PTSD symptom-free. He landed a civil service job, and is also securing a place in the Invictus Games for wheelchair basketball and wheelchair rugby. All of these are the achievements of a pretty confident, symptom-free individual. For more details, visit ptsdscuba.co.uk.
Now we come to the stories section. People, places, history and more. And we've got two items. Rowing the High Seas, HMS Audacious, finishes the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, and Meeting of Masonic Minds. Tune in to Craftcast, UGLE's popular podcast on Freemasonry. So the first of those two articles is entitled Four Men in a Boat. In his second year of rowing the Atlantic for charity, Freemason and submariner Hugo Mitchell Heggs and his fellow HMS Audacious, and that's spelt O-A-R-dacious, as in an oar for rowing, crew took on the arduous Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge. Most people spent Christmas Day enjoying a delicious meal around the table with their family. Lieutenant Commander Hugo Mitchell Heggs spent it eating rehydrated reindeer stew in a tiny rowing boat in the middle of the Atlantic. But at least he had company in the form of three crewmates. The rowers were taking part in the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, one of the world's toughest rowing challenges, 3,000 miles, or 2,800 nautical miles, from the Canary Islands to the West Indies. A submariner and Freemason, Hugo first took part in the race as the founder of HMS Audacious in 2019-2020, completing the crossing in 37 days and raising almost £120,000 for the Royal Navy's mental health charity, before having another go in December 2022. We will get flat, calm conditions where the ocean is like a mill pond, but we'll also experience waves that are 20 feet high, a cheerful Hugo told FMT from the Canary Islands as he prepared boat and crew before the race. It's like living on a log flume, eating, sleeping and rowing on a log flume, 24/7, with no respite. There are obviously extreme lows from the soreness and physical pain of it all, but it's the most phenomenal experience, he said. We learn about who we are, not just what we are physically capable of, but from experiencing the campaign as a whole. Rowing is just a fraction of it. We learn how to engage charities, to outreach with schools, carry out public speaking. It's a way of inspiring people, and we feel inspired by doing it. This year's Atlantic Challenge featured 40 teams who raced unsupported, other than for a couple of yachts that tracked the fleet in case of an emergency. That meant each 23-foot rowing boat needed to contain everything required for the four rowers: a rescue dinghy, clothes, medical supplies, and huge quantities of food and water. Rowers consume up to 5,000 calories and drink 10 litres of water each day as they row in a gruelling rotation of 2 hours on, 2 hours off, with two men on the oars at night and three during the day. That leaves little time between stints at the oars for those essentials, such as eating or sleeping or going to the loo, in a bucket, and washing. Infected cuts can be a major problem, so self-care is important. But despite the risks and the extreme physical exertion, Hugo maintains it's a peaceful, almost meditative experience. All you have to focus on is consuming calories, pushing, pulling and sleeping, he said. As well as serving as a submariner, founding HMS Audacious and preparing for the arrival of his first child, Busy Hugo is a member of Westminster and Keystone Lodge, the same lodge that his brother, father, uncle and late grandfather all attended. It's a really nice way to connect with people who knew my grandfather as a younger man, says Hugo. Freemasonry is a big part of my father's life, and he always has positive things to say. I'm proud to be following in their footsteps and share a special bond with people who knew my family. I feel passionately about giving, and I know the Freemasons are one of the biggest organisations in the country when it comes to spreading positivity. In 2019-2020, HMS Audacious raised more than £110,000 to support mental health and well-being in the Royal Navy, and the campaign has since helped raise an additional £430,000 for a Submariner memorial at the National Memorial Arboretum. The current fundraising programme began in October, and the team hopes to raise another £100,000. It's a cause of great significance to many submariners who understand the strain their profession places on them as well as on their families. One member of the team, Petty Officer John Norfolk, was recently diagnosed with PTSD. "I'd never really thought about the cause, but now it really resonates with me, and that need to support services for people and their families as well as those that have left the service," said Norfolk. The 2022 HMS Audacious team was made up of Lieutenant Commander Callum Fraser, who took part in 2019, plus newcomers Norfolk and Lieutenant Thomas Hutchinson. All are submariners, which meant that they were prepared for the enforced intimacy of a tiny rowing boat and appreciate the importance of respecting boundaries. Norfolk explained that team chemistry is almost as important as fitness, and since training began in spring 2021, the team has worked with a sports psychologist to identify potential flashpoints, as well as undertaking targeted physical training to improve endurance and stamina. Having been briefed on challenges such as capsizing, seasickness and heatstroke, Hutchinson welcomed the chance to focus on the fundamentals. "You're in complete isolation," he said. "You just get up and row, communicate with teammates and look after yourself for 40 days. The freedom that offers is what I was looking forward to the most. Then there are the wider implications of having a successful campaign, but that only comes if we're successful on the ocean." Hugo sees HMS Audacious as a long-term endeavour and has already built teams for the next two races. "We're aiming to have a team compete every year," he said. "We have one selected for 2023, and they'll be using a boat made from recycled material. We have an all-woman team of Navy personnel for December 2024, and that will be my legacy. I think this is my last race, and I want to pass the baton on. After you've done it once, you know what you're doing, and you know how to engage with media and charities. We have schools writing sea shanties about our adventures, and we partner with a global youth organisation that's doing science, technology, engineering and mathematics and innovation. We also work with the Sea Cadets and try to help people in socially deprived areas. That's on top of the mental health charity work. It's a lot more than just four blokes pulling on oars." You can visit hmsaudacious.com, that's hmsaudacious.com, HMS Audacious on Facebook or at HMS Audacious on Twitter.
At the end of that article, under the subheading Taking on the Might of the Sea, there are a few brief facts and statistics about rowing, which read as follows. Each team rows in excess of 1.5 million oar strokes during a race. Participants row for 2 hours and sleep for 2 hours, 24 hours a day. More people have climbed Everest than rowed across an ocean. Each rower needs to aim to consume 10 litres of water per day. The waves the rowers experience can measure up to 20 feet high. There is no toilet on board. Rowers use a bucket. Each rower loses on average 12 kilograms crossing the Atlantic. And finally, rowers burn in excess of 5,000 calories per day.
The second article in this stories section is called Conversations on the Craft. Riding high in the podcast charts since its launch at the end of last year, Craftcast gives both non-members and the initiated real-life insight into all aspects of Freemasonry. Back in November 2022, a new podcast made its debut. Hosted by three young Freemasons, Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast, set out to explore the fascinating world of all things Freemasonry. Within 24 hours of that first episode, the podcast was sitting comfortably in the Apple Podcast UK Top 100, as well as the Top 20 in the Society and Culture category. Craftcast is the official podcast of the United Grand Lodge of England, the governing body of Freemasonry in England, Wales, the Channel Islands, the Isle of Man, and a number of districts overseas. In each episode, Sean Butler, 29, James Dalton, 32, and Stephen Waitley, 22, chat about their experiences and interview special guests from across UGLE, such as Pro Grandmaster Jonathan Spence in episode 2. Craftcast provides a unique perspective on the craft through the eyes of younger members. In particular, the podcast aims to address the public perception of Freemasonry by opening up a new channel of communication to talk about all things Masonic with both members and non-members. In the future, the creators hope that new audiences of all ages will engage with Freemasonry and that Craftcast becomes the foremost Freemasonry podcast on the market. Host Sean Butler says, "We are delighted to have launched this new project and will be speaking to a variety of guests across the world of Freemasonry. We hope the podcast will educate people about our organisation and encourage them to find out more about Freemasonry." The first series has 10 episodes featuring interviews and discussions on Freemasonry and young people, as well as social media and common misconceptions about Freemasonry. To listen to the most recent episodes, visit craftcast.captivate.fm/listen. It's also available on Spotify, Amazon Music and Apple Music. To contact the Craftcast team for an interview or any other queries, email podcasts@ugle.org.uk. Page 55 starts the A Daily Advancement section, extending knowledge of Freemasonry. And there's one article this time, Past Pro Grandmasters. The museum presents a timeline of the 15 who have filled the role.
Past Masters. Museum of Freemasonry curator Mark Dennis reflects on some of the men who have held the office of Pro Grandmaster. Jonathan Spence joins an exclusive club within Freemasonry as Pro Grandmaster. There have only been 15 Pro Grandmasters before him. Of these, two became Grandmaster. One took the role after standing down as Grandmaster, and only the most recent has not been a nobleman. The first men to be in the position of what we now call Pro Grandmaster never held the actual rank. Thomas Howard, 3rd Earl of Effingham, and Francis Rawdon, Lord Moira, were the acting Grand Masters of the Premier Grand Lodge during the Grand Mastership of the Duke of Cumberland and, later, his brother George, Prince of Wales. This established the tradition of Royal Grand Masters appointing a peer of the realm to act for them when they were unable to attend, although the 1st Duke of Sussex did not appoint one for the first 16 years of his time as Grand Master of UGLE. The 1st Earl of Zetland became the first Pro Grand Master in 1834, and was later succeeded by his son. When the Duke of Sussex died in 1843, there were no Royal Freemasons, so the 2nd Earl of Zetland became Grand Master, followed by Earl de Grey and Ripon, who, as a young man, was expected to be in office for many years. Two unexpected events changed all this. First, the initiation of the Prince of Wales during a visit to Sweden, which led to his appointment as past Grand Master, and shortly afterwards, Ripon's resignation when he converted to Catholicism. These events led to the appointment of the Prince of Wales as Grand Master in 1874, remaining until he became King. The royal link continued with his youngest brother, the Duke of Connaught, who served until 1939. Their pro-Grand Masters included men as varied as a veteran of the Crimean War and a Viceroy of India. The shortest serving of the pro-Grand Masters was the 1st Lord Cornwallis, who was promoted to the rank in 1935, but died before his investiture. He was succeeded by Lord Harewood, who served during the latter years of Connaught's tenure and that of Prince George, Duke of Kent. He became Grand Master after the death of the Duke on active service in 1942, and was followed by the Dukes of Devonshire and Scarborough. The latter stepped down as Grand Master to allow the present Duke of Kent to take office, and became Pro Grand Master to assist him. To date, the current Grand Master has had 7 Pro Grand Masters, reflecting his time as the longest-serving Grand Master. Six were peers of the realm, but the appointment of Peter Lowndes set the precedent that any member can become the pro-Grand Master, whether ennobled or not. That continues with Jonathan Spence. All of these men brought wisdom and experience from their lives outside Freemasonry, and have been influential in the way that English Freemasonry has developed throughout an ever-changing world. Their long tenure emphasizes how much of Freemasonry's history has had the honor of being led by members of the royal family.
And the next short section is Grand Lodge news from Great Queen Street. And this has one article in it, Bolstering the Membership. And the article is an introduction to the members of the Members' Pathway Working Party. It says, meet the Working Party. The Members' Pathway Working Party was put together to design and implement the strategy for the Members' Pathway, set up to retain interest in Freemasonry and see it thrive and grow. The Members' Pathway provides an overall framework to help lodges plan lodge and membership development, attract and welcome new members, engage with new and existing members to increase involvement and satisfaction and minimise losses due to resignation, cessation and exclusion, and find ways to encourage those who have drifted away to rekindle their interest and rejoin. The aim is to help lodges be more vibrant and meetings to be more enjoyable and satisfying so that every member looks forward to the next meeting with an infectious enthusiasm. So here we go through the names and positions of the people in the working party, starting with Stephen Varley. He's chairman of the Pathway Working Party. He's RCG 6 Rep East Midlands, Provincial Grand Master of Derbyshire, member of the Board of General Purposes. Then there's Ian Copestake, secretary of the Pathway Working Party. He's Deputy Provincial Grand Master, Derbyshire. Then we start with the RCG reps. Chris Maudsley is RCG 1 Rep, the North Provincial Membership Officer for Yorkshire and West Riding. Ken Williams is RCG 2 Rep for North West Corner. He is Provincial Membership Officer for Cheshire. Chris Jones is RCG 3 Rep for West Midlands. He's Provincial Mentor for Shropshire. Steve Fern is RCG 4 Rep for South Wales and the West. He's Provincial Membership Officer of West Wales. David Robinson is RCG 5 Rep for the Thames Valley. Provincial Group Membership Officer for Oxfordshire is his position. Richard Minchell is RCG 6 Rep for East Midlands area. He's past Provincial Senior Grand Warden of Nottinghamshire. Colin Felton is RCG 7 Rep for East Anglia and Hertfordshire. He's the Assistant Provincial Grand Master of Essex. RCG 8 Rep is Mark Costello, South East Assistant Provincial Grand Master. He's Provincial Membership Officer, East Kent. Peter Higgins, RCG 9 Rep for South West and the Islands, past Provincial Deputy Grand Director of Ceremonies, he is. Chris Hurst is RCG Rep for Metropolitan. He's Project Manager of the Working Party. Michael Ward is Committee Member, Deputy President of the Board of General Purposes and Chairman of the Membership Working Party. Michelle Warville is Director of Communications and Marketing, UGLE. Pretty Ladd is committee member, director of the Member Services UGLE. Nick Thomas is the university's scheme representative, and he's secretary of the university's scheme Staffordshire. Colin Gale is a committee member. He's Communications and Pathway Working Party representative on Learning and Development Group, and he's past Assistant Master of Devonshire. Graham Chisnell is Lead Training and Development, and he's Provincial Membership Officer for East Kent. Charlie Griffin is Committee Member of Training and Development, and he's Metropolitan Grand Steward. Gavin Jones is a Committee Member, Comms, Provincial Pathway Officer, Facebook Admin, and Master Mason. And Andy Glaives, finally, Committee Member, Comms, Provincial Pathway Officer, Facebook Admin, and Master Mason. Now we come to the section entitled The Royal Arch, Thoughts from the Supreme Grand Chapter. And there are two articles, Ceremonial Occasion, Pro First Grand Principal's Address to the Supreme Grand Chapter, and Back to School, Essex Royal Arch Gives Local Schools Some Extra Christmas Cheer.
On page 64, Completing the Journey. In his November address to the Supreme Grand Chapter, Pro First Grand Principal of the Royal Arch, Jonathan Spence, talks about aspiring to the fourth element. Companions, I am delighted to see so many of you here today, despite the change in date caused by circumstances beyond our control. The irony will not be lost on any of you that, in the end, the cause of the change of date was removed, but it happened too late for us to do anything about it. I suppose, as the French would say, c'est la vie. I must first thank the second Grand Principal for installing me today in his customary exemplary style. I would also like to thank both the Grand Scribe Ezra and the Grand Director of Ceremonies and their respective teams for ensuring that the arrangements for today have gone so smoothly. Some may be wondering why the installation took place at all. I have held the office of Pro First Grand Principal from the moment I was installed as Pro Grand Master. It is a long-standing custom for this installation, including a formal obligation in respect of the office, to take place both to re-emphasise the interconnectedness of the craft and the Royal Arch, and to underline the importance of the Royal Arch in English Freemasonry under the United Grand Lodge of England. In 1813, our predecessors in the two rival Grand Lodges were seeking to achieve an appropriate and delicate balance in order to create a statement about the Royal Arch that would allow their union to form a united Grand Lodge of England. That statement, derived from the 1813 Act of Union, now forms the preliminary declaration in our Book of Constitutions and makes us unique among Grand Lodges around the world by establishing a clear and indissoluble link between the craft and the Royal Arch. That statement means that we, as Freemasons of the United Grand Lodge established in 1813, practice pure ancient Masonry. This consists of 3 degrees and no more, namely those of the Entered Apprentice, the Fellow Craft, and the Master Mason, including the Supreme Order of the Holy Royal Arch. It is clear there are 4 elements at play here, the first 3 being governed by the United Grand Lodge of England, and the 4th, the Royal Arch, whose operation and governance is entrusted to this Supreme Grand Chapter. Because of this link, the Grand Master automatically serves as our first Grand Principal, and many other senior roles are also automatically held in both the Craft and Royal Arch. This glorious building, of course, gives a tangible expression to this joint heritage. In real terms, we are therefore one organisation, and so when someone is made a Freemason, he needs to be made fully aware from the outset that his journey as one consists of these 4 elements. With the Royal Arch as the 4th and ultimate stage, and one which enriches and completes that journey. It is an aspect that I hope all will aspire to experience when the time is right for them. As a practical consequence of this indissoluble link, and to demonstrate its reality, we have developed a clear, integrated strategy moving forwards. As many of you are aware, the Strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and beyond will be launched at the December quarterly communication. A key part of this strategy is that the Craft and Royal Arch must work seamlessly together at all levels as one organisation. This means not only that we must better educate all our members about the value of the Royal Arch and its benefit, but also exploit this link in more practical ways to engage and retain our members who are so vital for our future. It also means that we must start at the beginning and move to a clear understanding of this 4-stage experience within our own craft lodges, so that the indissoluble link is in the forefront and visible. What better way could there be to express this than with the image of the interlinked red and blue chains you will have seen around the building today? I must again emphasise, companions, that this 4th element is one that all Freemasons under the United Grand Lodge of England ought to aspire to experience when the time is right for them. It would be quite counterproductive to force the issue if it is not yet the right time for an individual member of the craft. I would strongly encourage Master Masons to experience the Royal Arch and complete their journey in pure ancient Masonry before joining any other orders of Freemasonry, however supportive I am and will remain of those other orders. Many of you will have noticed that when I was escorted into Grand Chapter, I was, and still am, wearing the Tercentenary Jewel. As both Pro Grand Master and Pro First Grand Principal, I am proud to celebrate our combined history by wearing it in this meeting, just as we do in our own private chapters. I hope that in future, companions will be allowed and encouraged to wear it in Grand Chapter. To support these objectives and to assist our members in explaining the benefits of Royal Arch membership, the Committee of General Purposes and its working parties are developing Archway. This will serve as a resource of examples of good practice from across our constitution, of which individual chapters, as well as provinces and districts, can take advantage. A lot of work remains to be done. We should not expect to see a single grand launch of Archway in the next few months, but see it as the start of a process that will develop during the course of 2023. One of the first releases will highlight the value of membership and how we discover more about Freemasonry in the Royal Arch. I have also asked the Committee of General Purposes to consider with the Board of General Purposes to what extent there are other steps we might take together to enhance this integrated approach, including, for example, the role of the Royal Arch representatives in our craft lodges. The committee will also be clarifying existing guidance on the delivery of lectures. We all know that many chapters often still spoil the magnificent experience of an exaltation by the delivery of too many lectures immediately afterwards, or by persisting with outdated approaches to the way they run their meetings. They then wonder why new members fail to return. It does not have to be like this. There are many examples of good practice throughout this country that our districts and chapters can adopt if they wish to thrive. Indeed, there are many chapters that have already adapted and are thriving, with queues of good candidates waiting to join, because these chapters are not only perceived as serious about what they do, but also have a reputation for being very enjoyable. I must be clear, there is no one-size-fits-all solution. We are a diverse organisation, but that diversity is also one of our great strengths. The key must be to ensure our members are engaged. We are all aware of the challenges that both the Royal Arch and the craft face as we move forward, united together. But it is also well known that those who join the Royal Arch are far more likely to remain engaged with their lodges, and that, ultimately, is to everyone's benefit. I am excited about the future and very much hope you, our members, will enthusiastically embrace the opportunities for your individual chapters to thrive with all your members engaged with good ceremonies and great enjoyment. Thank you, companions.
Our second article in this section is entitled Top Marks to Essex Royal Arch. Thanks to the generosity of the province's Royal Arch Freemasons, children in 20 Essex primary schools had a little more Christmas cheer. Provincial Grand Master and Grand Superintendent of the Royal Arch Freemasons in Essex, Paul Tarrant, ticked all the right boxes in the run-up to Christmas 2022 when he and his Royal Arch companions approved a grant of £10,000 to support 20 local primary schools that are facing cost-of-living challenges. All the schools are near to a Masonic centre and each received a £500 grant to give them a helping hand in what should be a time of happiness for everyone. With around 7,500 Freemasons in Essex, more than half are also members of the Royal Arch, a connected organisation whose members are known as companions that meet in chapters at Masonic centres across Essex, like their Masonic brothers who meet in lodges. Helping local communities is at the heart of Freemasonry, and at the end of every Royal Arch meeting there's always a focus on peace in the world and goodwill to all. Elliot Chevin, the Deputy Grand Superintendent in Essex, reflected on these values when he said, "We consider these especially for younger children and wanted them to share in the excitement at school leading up to Christmas." Restraints on school budgets meant that some planned activities and celebrations had to be cut back as schools battled with increased costs. Elliot said the children would have lost out through no fault of their own. The extra money helped schools with activities that would have been trimmed to save money. The feeling among the Royal Arch companions in Essex was that giving some additional joy at this time of year was so important, especially for children, and we're all pleased we did this. And a list of the Masonic centres and their local primary schools involved were Braintree, Great Bradfords, Chelmsford, Maltese Road, Chingford, Whitehall, Clacton, St Clair's, Colchester, St Thomas More's, Frinton, Kirby Primary Academy, Grays, Chaddle, St Mary, Halstead, Holy Trinity, Harlow, St James, Harwich, Mayflower, Loughton, Staples Road, Malden, Wentworth, Manningtree, Highfields, Orsett, Orsett Primary, Rochford, Stanbridge, Saffron Walden, St Mary's, Southend-on-Sea, Kingsdown, Tollesbury, Tollesbury, Upminster, Branfell, and Witham, Chipping Hill. And now our four book reviews, and this time they are The Cornerstone by Albert B. Rother, 21st Century Rosicrucianism by Robert Gordon, Chapter and Verse, 100 Years of Royal Arch Talks by Ron Selby, and The Knights Templars in the Holy Land by David West. So let's start with the first.
The first book review is for The Cornerstone by Albert B. Rother, and the review is by Richard Watkins. A rather handy guide. 365 bite-sized lessons for everyone. There are a number of guides, including those produced by UGLE, London and the provinces, designed to help newly made entered apprentices learn, understand and progress in their early years in Freemasonry. I have only to think back to my own state of complete ignorance, which probably lasted well beyond my early years, to appreciate just how important these guides are, and how I wish some of them had been available when I took my first regular step. Split into 365 bite-sized lessons, The Cornerstone is structured around the daily advancement in Masonic knowledge, and as such is a useful and easy-to-read companion for anyone wanting to find out more about Freemasonry. Its pocket-sized format makes it perfect for dipping into when time and circumstance allow, and although some subjects are treated in a necessarily brief style, it is both interesting and informative throughout. Having read lengthy tomes on the origins of Freemasonry, it's refreshing to see it being covered in around 250 words. Other subjects include an explanation of Masonic titles, roles and responsibilities, the setup of the lodge, different types of ritual, quirks and culture, and the side orders beyond the craft. The book is written by Albert Beauregard Rother, or A.B. Rother as he is referred to throughout, with a foreword by Malcolm Levi that may give some insight as to the book's origin. As well as being a useful and compact guide, there are a couple of further nice touches. A commemorative plate allows a lodge to record the members' initiation and then presumably present them with a copy of the book. Also, all proceeds from the sale go to Masonic charities.
And that review was by Richard Watkins. The Cornerstone by Albert B. Rother is self-published, 480 pages, price £14.99. Now the second book is 21st Century Rosicrucianism by Robert Gordon. Just as relevant today, a look at an extraordinary phenomenon, and the review is by Aubrey Buchanan. Rosicrucianism is a complex phenomenon with a wide variety of manifestations. Many readers will know of Masonic ones, such as the ancient and accepted rite, often referred to as the Rosa Croix, and the Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia. Whatever the manifestation, however, they're all more or less take as their starting point three pamphlets published between 1614 and 1616. Whether written as a hoax by German theologian Johann Valentin Andrei, 1586 to 1654, or not, fascination with them spread quickly across Europe. This book is a collection of papers, many of which were delivered at meetings of the Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia, that provided a good historical overview of Rosicrucianism's origins, spread, and later development through the 18th and 19th centuries to the present day. The real aim of the book, however, is to explore how an older esoteric tradition can be squared with today's fast-paced, fragmented and increasingly digital world. Robert Gordon sets out his personal view on what it means to live as a Rosicrucian in the 21st century. Tellingly, he also points out that with Rosicrucianism there is no one person or even group that has an answer to suit everyone, because ultimately it all rests in experience and not interpretation, he says. He goes on to say that he hopes readers will be energised by the idea that Rosicrucianism is a lot more than obscure symbolism put down in old texts, unquote. All of this might not be everyone's cup of tea, but for anyone with an interest in the subject, it is definitely worth reading. My only beef is that there is no index, which is a pity. That apart, I enjoyed it very much. And 21st Century Rosicrucianism by Robert Gordon is published by Lewis Masonic. It's 250 pages, priced £14.99.
The third book review is for Chapter and Verse, 100 Years of Royal Arch Talks, by Ron Selby, and the review is by Sestrian. All in One Place, a fine addition to Royal Arch history. The Authors Club was founded in 1891. Aside from professional writers, its membership included significant establishment figures who could show that they were published authors. Out of the club came, first, the Authors' Lodge in 1910, and 4 years later, the Authors' Chapter. Both enjoy the same pleasing number, 3, 4, 5, 6, and both, more pleasing still, thrive today. This fine book opens with a reproduction of a letter from the club secretary in 1909, bearing a list of members on the letterhead. A notable bunch, they included Sherlock Holmes creator Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the then poet laureate, the authors of King Solomon's Mines and The Prisoner of Zender, and Charles Burgess Fry, cricketer, quadruple Oxford Blue, classicist, writer, and more. John Arlott described Fry as probably the most variously gifted Englishman of any age. Not satisfied with 94 first-class centuries and having twice taken 10 wickets in a match, he invented the Diabolo toy, could leap from a standing start onto a mantelpiece, turning around in mid-air and bowing on landing, and was offered the throne of Albania, which he politely declined. Listed also were others with names redolent of that golden age: Morley Roberts, Pulteney Bigelow, and Egerton Castle. What a pity that in our benighted times such characterful names have all but disappeared. I must stop digressing, however, and get on reviewing the book, so here goes. This excellent collection is a sample of the many talks on Royal Arch Masonry given in the Authors' Chapter from 1916 to the present day. Deftly edited by Ron Selby, it is illustrated well and attractively produced. Chapter and Verse is an intriguing display of interesting, erudite, and wide-ranging scholarship. If FMT tolerated anything as vulgar as a star rating, I would unhesitatingly give this book 5.
And that book, Chapter and Verse, 100 Years of Royal Arch Talks, edited by Ron Selby, is published by Lewis Masonic. It's 307 pages, price £21. And the final book review is The Knights Templars in the Holy Land by David West. It's reviewed by Richard Jaffa, and it's entitled A Nasty End, Shedding Light on Their Rise and Fall. The Crusades were almost 200 years of war, sieges, massacres and mayhem. The Knights Templar were established in 1119, 20 years after the First Crusade had successfully captured Jerusalem. Between then and their demise in 1312, they fought with varying degrees of success during the next 8 Crusades. With papal recognition as a monastic order, they adopted many of the practices of monks, such as prayer, chastity, and poverty. However, they were required to be ready to go into battle against the enemies of the church. Although they were well equipped and disciplined, they suffered horribly on the field of battle. When they were defeated in the Battle of La Forbi in 1244 after the Sixth Crusade, only 1 in 10 of the Knights Templar survived. Those who were captured were usually executed. In addition, funding their expeditions was a financial burden and required constant fundraising. The order maintained more than 4,000 horses, as well as mules and camels. West has compressed into 160 pages what several historians have taken many volumes to describe, as well as distinguishing between those crusades that were significant and the minor ones. He details the brutality and hardship, the ever-changing political allegiances in Europe, and how the Near East was ravaged by Saladin, Genghis Khan, the Mongols, and the Mamluks. It all came to a nasty end for the Knights Templar. West advances several plausible reasons why Pope Clement V turned against them. Moreover, King Philip IV of France didn't even bother to wait for the Pope to decide on their fate. He arrested and tortured many of them, and their last Grand Master, Jacques de Molay, was burned at the stake on an island in the Seine. It should, of course, be made clear that the medieval Knights Templar have no direct link with modern-day Masonic Knights Templar. And the book, The Knights Templar in the Holy Land by David West, reviewed here by Richard Jaffa, is published by Hamilton House Publishing, 176 pages, and it's priced £11.99.
On page 71, Community and Charity, MCF Chief Executive Les Hutchinson looks back on an inspirational and productive year. It has been a busy and eventful year for the Masonic Charitable Foundation. In addition to maintaining the smooth running of our core charity operations, we have responded to several unexpected events and launched new projects and partnerships. On a sad note, we must pay tribute to our former President and Vice Grand President, Richard Hone, KC, who passed away in October 2022. Richard had recently retired from his role as president after 19 years of service. His contributions to our work will not be forgotten. Despite the current economic crisis and cost of living challenges, we remain focused on supporting those in need. Our Masonic support team is committed to assisting those most affected by providing a broad range of help for a growing number of charities and individuals. Our goal is to give as much assistance as possible to those who are struggling during these tricky times. One of the main drivers behind the creation of the MCF in 2016 was to establish a needs-led charity offering support and services that reflect the ever-changing circumstances of individuals and families. Consequently, we have expanded our mental health assistance, allowing children and young people to access services previously restricted to adults. At the end of 2022, we allocated a further £100,000 from the Ukraine appeal to the British Red Cross Family Reunification Programme to help families that had been displaced and separated. This latest grant takes Freemasonry's total contribution in support of Ukrainian refugees to £1.15 million. My sincere thanks to all who have contributed. We have also marked the end of our £1.2 million 4-year partnership with Age UK that supported its Later Life Goals programme. The initiative has been highly successful, enabling more than 10,000 older people to access advice and services to help reduce loneliness in later life. The programme's advisors also identified more than £21 million of previously unclaimed state benefits, which are now helping older people have a better quality of life. In December 2022, we held a virtual annual general meeting as rail strikes disrupted the planned in-person event. More than 50 attendees representing their provinces were updated about our work in 2021 and 22. We also outlined the themes of our new strategy that will guide the MCF's charitable activities over the coming years in a manner that complements UGLE's objectives. As ever, I am grateful for the support of our President, James Long, and Chairman, Sir Paul Williams, and the input of the Trustee Board, Senior Leadership Team, and Provincial and UGLE representatives. With the lifting of lockdown, we have attended an increasing number of events, including the launch of the Sussex Festival and the conclusion of Devonshire's Festival, and we held a successful PGA conference in Bristol. Later this year, we will launch festival appeals in Nottinghamshire, Wiltshire, and Yorkshire West Riding, and celebrate the finale of festivals in Berkshire, Cambridgeshire, Warwickshire, and Worcestershire. I was also proud to attend the opening by the Grand Master, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, KG, of the RMBI Care Company's new home, Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh Court, in Berkshire. The newly built home will offer residential and nursing care for 45 residents, with the latest in assistive technology and, like all RMBI homes, specialist dementia care. As with the MCF, the RMBI has exciting plans to provide Freemasons, their loved ones and local communities with more outstanding care. I would like to thank all Freemasons, their families and friends who support us with their generosity and dedication. We remain committed to helping those in need and look forward to continuing our work.
Page 72 has an article entitled The MCF's Partnerships, Past, Present and Future, a much-needed helping hand to get the most out of later life. Two of the Masonic Charitable Foundation's important partnerships have changed recently. The one with Age UK has come to an end. The one with Hospice UK has seen the introduction of a programme that provides bursaries to hospice staff. Both partnerships align with the MCF's mission to support vulnerable and, in many cases, elderly people in England, Wales, the Channel Islands and the Isle of Man. In the context of these two partnerships, the MCF is looking back at what's been achieved and looking forward to what's to come. In 2018, the MCF launched a £1 million 4-year partnership with Age UK that would allow their Later Life Goals project to roll out in 13 areas across England and Wales, benefiting more than 10,000 older people who were experiencing loneliness. Thanks to the MCF's assistance, Age UK Later Life Goals advisors have been able to offer time, compassion, expert information and advice to help older people to feel less lonely, access financial help and get the most out of later life. In total, 10,219 older people have benefited from holistic support and 4,846 have received help in their homes, while more than £21 million in unclaimed benefits and income has been claimed, an average of around £4,000 per person in extra income each year. In the Hospice UK partnership, the same overall aim applies – helping provide the best quality care to vulnerable and mostly elderly people across England and Wales. The objective hasn't changed, but the journey to achieving it has, and it starts with staff. To address the issue of staff retention in hospices, the MCF has created a bursary scheme with Hospice UK to help the professional development of staff and health professionals. As a result, hospices will be able to provide better and more specialised assistance to their residents. The new bursary scheme will provide grants for hospice staff to take courses in palliative care or dementia care to support patients better. This new scheme replaces the annual core hospice grants programme, which had a limited measurable impact. Instead, the same budget of £300,000 a year will now be focused on the bursary scheme, providing ongoing support that has a clear purpose within the hospice movement. Hospices in every Masonic province in England, Wales, the Channel Islands and the Isle of Man are eligible for funding from the MCF's partnership with Hospice UK. To spread the funding equally, there is a maximum amount available for each hospice. Those who apply must be working in an eligible organisation as one of the following roles: nurse, healthcare assistant, doctor, allied health professional, social worker, bereavement counsellor, administration staff, spiritual care worker, pharmacist or complementary therapist. Individuals comply for a maximum of 50% of their course or module fees, up to £1,500, in any one year. It's not only the Hospice UK partnership that focuses on professional development. Through the MCF's work with Age UK, funding has been provided for its national volunteering programme. This provides training and resources that help to engage new volunteers, as well as ensuring continued positive experiences for the more than 30,000 people who currently volunteer for the charity. One Age UK volunteer said, "I love volunteering for your charity. I get as much out of it as my telephone friend does, and I genuinely look forward to speaking with them every week. I feel like my life has been enriched immensely since I started my volunteering role. Since the MCF was established in 2016, it's developed its grants, services and partnerships in line with a long-term strategic goal to help the most disadvantaged people in society. The success of the Age UK partnership sets a high standard for the results of the Hospice UK bursary programme, and the MCF's charity grants team has been working hard to ensure it will be achievable. The MCF is looking forward to sharing the positive results of this latest partnership, as well as updates on the long-term impact of Age UK's Later Life Goals programme. And if you're interested in learning more about the MCF's partnerships and charity grants programmes, then visit mcf.org.uk/FMT61, that's the number 6 and the number 1, /charity.
Assistance for our young. Mental health support for children and young people. For the past 10 years, the Masonic Charitable Foundation has been offering access to mental health support for adults, helping hundreds of Freemasons and their families. Now, mental health support is available for children and young people. According to the Health Foundation, mental health illnesses have become more common among 6 to 16-year-olds, especially after the pandemic. The number of children and young people experiencing mental health problems has increased by 60% since 2017, meaning that around 500,000 more young people might be in need of assistance. The NHS also states that mental health problems are increasingly common in young people, caused by a range of factors such as family, school, and relationships. The service provided through the MCF means that children or grandchildren of Freemasons can receive mental health support. Depending on the child's age, they can get help with anxiety, PTSD or exam stress, or access confidential counselling to talk about their feelings, friendship issues, school pressures or bullying. Gareth Everett, head of Masonic Support at the MCF, said, "Mental health support for adults is a valuable service provided through the MCF. Now, as we see an increasing need for mental health assistance for people of all ages, we are delighted to extend our service to include the children and grandchildren of Freemasons from the age of 5 upwards. The service is delivered through an experienced and independent provider and gives access to fully trained and qualified mental health practitioners. If the child is younger than 11, support will be provided through a non-clinical assessment, with mental health practitioners providing information and advice. If the child is older than 16, they can access adult mental health services."
And our final article in this edition of the magazine, Providing Shelter and Safety. Freemasonry's incredible support for Ukraine passes the £1 million mark. Thousands of Ukrainian people living in communities across England and Wales will receive practical help thanks to another £500,000 grant from the Masonic Charitable Foundation in partnership with UK community foundations. This follows a previous grant of £500,000 awarded in April 2022 that was split equally between UNICEF UK, Plan International UK, the Refugee Council, British Red Cross and UK for UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, to assist Ukrainian refugees on the ground in Ukraine, Poland, Romania and Moldova. Another separate donation of £50,000 was made shortly after the Russian invasion in February 2022. This latest grant means that Freemasons have given more than £1 million to people who have fled Ukraine since the war began. The new programme of grants will see 10 community foundations in the UK supporting local charities and community organisations that are actively providing immediate aid for people arriving from Ukraine, as well as those who are developing longer-term support for the integration of Ukrainians already here. The community foundations that will each be receiving grants of up to £50,000 from the Freemasons are Community Foundation Wales, East End Community Foundation, Essex Community Foundation, Sussex Community Foundation, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Foundation, Heart of England Community Foundation, Community Foundation for Surrey, Kent Community Foundation, Community Foundations for Lancashire and Merseyside, and Hertfordshire Community Foundation. Rosemary MacDonald, the Chief Executive Officer at UK Community Foundations, said, "We're very grateful to the Freemasons charity for their generous grant. It'll provide a major boost to local charities that are doing so much to welcome Ukrainians into their communities. It's the small grassroots charities and groups that know their local areas that are best able to listen to new arrivals and help them find the resources and assistance they need." More than 100,000 Ukrainians have been given shelter by British families with government support, but many of those were six-month arrangements that are now coming to an end. As a result, many of them have faced homelessness since winter began. Nearly 150,000 Ukrainians have arrived in the UK since February 2022, just a fraction of the estimated 8 million Ukrainians who have fled their country. A further 8 million people have been internally displaced inside Ukraine. Les Hutchinson, chief executive of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, said, "I'm pleased we've been able to provide substantial assistance to Ukrainians in need across the country. There's been an unprecedented wave of support for Ukrainians from the British public, but there's a great deal more that needs to be done. These are people who have left everything behind in a country suffering the effects of a devastating war, and I'm proud the help Freemasons have provided has now exceeded £1 million. The MCF is thankful for the generosity of Freemasons in making a positive, long-term difference, not only to the lives of people in our local communities, but further afield." And that completes our reading of FMT, Freemasonry Today magazine, the official journal of the United Grand Lodge of England. This has been issue 61 for spring 2023. Thank you for listening.